how what a brilliant job you've done tonight, mate. I'm just so proud of you.
Well, that's so kind of you. And John is a host, by the way. John hosts our environmental program, and I believe you changed your hour to 10 a.m. Eastern. Is that correct? 10 a.m. to 11?
Yeah, that's
John.
Right. But, aside from Harrison on the Edge, who got knocked off air, and I don't know what he's.
This is the Quality News Network. It was a volatile day on Wall Street today after yesterday's nearly 400-point Dow Jones drop. We'll have the closing numbers coming up in our business segment. In Utah, rescue crews lowered a tiny microphone deep into a hole that was drilled more than 1,800 feet into the mine where the six workers have been trapped since Monday. However, there was no evidence picked up that would indicate the miners are still alive. The rescuers may have punched a hole into a nearby chamber, not the one the miners are thought to be in. Three miners were killed in an Indiana mine accident today. It occurred at an air shaft that was under construction about 30 miles north of Evansville. In Minneapolis, a total of 8 bodies have been recovered so far after last week's I-35 West Bridge collapse. Navy divers are now helping local dive teams in the recovery effort. The United Nations Security Council voted unanimously today to increase the UN's role in Iraq. It would involve promoting talks between the various political and ethnic groups. In Afghanistan today, negotiations took place between 2 top Taliban leaders and 4 South Korean officials. 21 members of a South Korean missionary group have been held hostage in the country for 3 weeks. CNN reports that U.S. military intelligence officials are assessing what would happen to Pakistan's nuclear weapons if General Pervez Musharraf loses power. He took power in 1999 after a coup and is facing growing political opposition. The White House vows it will go ahead with a crackdown on illegal immigration without Congress. As part of the executive office plan, sanctions will be imposed on employers who hire illegal immigrants. Also, employees who cannot clear up Social Security number problems within 30 days can be fired. According to a Justice Department report on crime, in 2005, African Americans were the victims of nearly half of the murders in the U.S. However, they only make up about 13% of the population. The statistics also reveal that most murder victims were killed by someone of their own race. The Space Shuttle Endeavour linked up with the International Space Station today. The spacecraft did a backflip so NASA engineers could check through high-resolution imagery if foam insulation had damaged the craft when it took off. You are listening to the Quality News Network. Science and Business News coming up next.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
The Department of Agriculture reports that the average price for a gallon of whole milk is $3.80, the highest it has ever been. That's a 51-cent a gallon hike since February. Dairy experts blame the price increase on milk shortages in Europe and Australia. Walt Disney World has increased the price of a one-day adult pass to its Orlando, Florida theme parks to $71. Worldwide stock markets plunged today, including in Europe and Japan. Analysts say the turmoil is caused by a ripple effect about fears of a U.S. mortgage crisis. Today, the Federal Reserve put liquidity into the banking system 3 times. The Fed put in $19 billion, then $16 billion, and lastly another $3 billion to help the financial system stabilize. Countrywide Financial, the largest home lender in the U.S., said that its earnings and financial condition are threatened because of problems with the U.S. mortgage market. The Wall Street Journal reports that the Securities and Exchange Commission is looking into whether major banks are vulnerable to home loan defaults. The examination has been characterized as routine oversight. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $71.47 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street this week, the Dow Jones was down 31 points at 13,239, the NASDAQ down 12, the S&P 500 up 1. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
Okay, don't you
stop America.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Six minutes past the hour, I'm Bob Kincaid. Welcome to this Friday night edition of Head On. Sorry about yesterday. But, you know, when you're a family guy, I'm sorry, that might be trademarked, and when you've got technical issues to try to make things better here, you will find that sometimes you just have to be gone. For those of you following the issue, our lovely daughter is doing okay. She's a 13-year-old with a pretty bad sore throat right now, because apparently here in our little clan, genetically speaking, we generate tonsils the size of half dollars. Fair to say, Agnes? We are professional tonsil producers. Another one of those useless bits of tissue that exist in the human body and run contrary, of course, to any notion of intelligent design. Explain to me the intelligence of tonsils and adenoids. Little sacs that do nothing but sit there and collect infection. Thanks, God. Thanks, intelligent designer. You rock. Not. But that's not where we begin this evening. We begin, it appears that either the people trying to drill the hole to reach the miners in Utah drilled into the wrong section of the mine, or the alternative is almost unspeakable. Because they did lower a microphone to where they thought the miners would be today, and they were met with the silence of the grave. And three people died in Indiana today trying to build an air shaft for another mine somewhere north of Evansville. Yeah. Heartrending. Heartrending what we will do to keep the lights on. But, you know, as the fiends of coal like to say here in West Virginia, coal, it keeps the lights on. Some of us add, in the funeral parlors. Oh, just so sad. So very sad. And you hope against hope that something better can come of it. But with these sorts of things, you know that the likelihood is not great. And the likelihood is reduced not by the very nature of the problem itself, but by the things that exacerbate the problem. The corporatists, the greedmongers, Bob Murray, the Bob Murrays of the world, the international coal groups of the world that care more about a piece of equipment than they do a human being, because you actually have to pay to repair the piece of equipment if it breaks down. If a human being drops dead, well, that's no big deal. There's somebody else waiting to get a job anyway. And, you know, that's just how they, that's how they deal with it. You know, and that's the price that you and I pay for being able to walk out of a room and leave the lights on or leave the computers going overnight because we're in too much of a hurry to sit and start the thing up and wait 15 seconds or a minute. Oh, a minute? We've got to wait a minute for it to boot up? Our lives are valuable. We can't wait a minute. We have to just leave it on all the time. Don't we? Sure. Sure. Now, there are, of course, far more legitimate uses of energy. We are in the middle of a legitimate reason for energy consumption right now. If you can imagine, up here on the mountain, in our secure, undisclosed location, the thermometer hit 104 degrees yesterday. And it hit the same or thereabouts today, and will likely do it again tomorrow. And the next day. I understand. You know, August is in terms of the seasons of the year, August is to summer what February is to winter. The very socked in, just peak of the season. And you expect it to be hot. But my God in heaven, 104 degrees in the Appalachians? At a couple of thousand feet altitude, man, hot, hot, hot. Now, so, you know, air conditioners are running, and elderly Americans are advised to, you know, stay in the cool. Don't stress yourself. You know, I just walked out to the mailbox today, and the sun on my back felt like a hammer. It did. It pounds on you. And it can be very, very dangerous to work in this kind of stuff. I feel sorry for the people who have to. And God knows, like delivery drivers who walk in and out and stay either in their truck or walking across asphalt or something on a parking lot all day long. You know, they're not getting 104 degrees. They're getting 120 degrees or 124 because of the heat rising off the pavement. So by all means, stay safe during this. Please, please, please. Now, down in the mines in Utah, that mine where the owner has been cited, 200 times or more for safety violations because, you know, what matters is the money. What matters is the profit. What matters is his ability to make payments on something like, oh, I don't know, a new swimming pool, new car, or maybe just new investments in the little miracle that is the stock market. There are folks of Hispanic extraction. I guess that's the best way to say it. And with that, and I couldn't help thinking about that when I ran across this latest piece of genius, highly entertaining radio from Georgia Association of Broadcasters award winner Neil Bortz. Bortz is also a nominee for the Georgia Radio Hall of Fame 2007 Career Achievement Award. So you know when Neil Bortz does radio, it's got to be high quality radio, doesn't it? I mean, this is going to be radio that's uplifting, that is something that raises your day above the ordinary and the mundane, something that makes you glad to be alive and makes you realize that you've succeeded for that day in bettering yourself by learning something you didn't know. I mean, this guy is an award winner, so you know that it's going to be radio that makes you glad you got out of bed that day, right? Come on, he's a right-wing talker. All he does is filth and hate. And so, like I said, I thought of the miners in Utah when I heard this today.
Well, the question is this, Belinda. How many children do they have there that could not speak English?
See, I don't know because I didn't talk to the children.
Why don't you
ask? For the parents, not the children, because I'm sure the
Oh, you can look at the parents and tell the ones that are...
Well, you know, we have a few Hispanic families.
The ones with sombreros.
What'd you say?
Uh-huh.
I said you can look at the parents and tell, because the ones with sombreros can't speak
English. Oh, Lord, have mercy.
The one with the bandoliers full of bullets across their chest.
I just hope the people at this school do not listen to your show.
I'm... Belinda.
In English.
It's in English. God. Oh, this is terrible, Belinda. I feel so bad for your kid.
Now, that is the Georgia Association of Broadcasters Hall of Fame nominee and best on-air radio personality from the Georgia Association of Broadcasters, Neil Bortz. From today, the 10th day of August, with Hispanic people trapped in a mine in Utah. This is Neil Bortz, who said that the victims of the shootings at Virginia Tech represented, because these people didn't fight back against a man who was going wild with a firearm, that it represented the wussification of America. He called murder victims wussies. He's a millionaire. He owns a private plane about which he brags flying around. They do power lunch broadcasts from Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in Atlanta. Man, these are some professional broadcasters. And you better listen, because Bortz, man, he's an intellect. He is an intellect. That's why he's able to give hell to his one of his flunkies on the show, the Belinda Carlisle or something. No. She sang something. Belinda, though. Belinda and Royal are his two flunkies. And he was giving Belinda hell for sending her child to the public school system, which he refers to as government schools. Government schools. Because America does not need public schools. Because Bortz is, after all, a libertarian. Hell, maybe he's one of those weirdo Ayn Rand objectivists, for all I know. But he is a great intellect. He is a giant of a broadcaster. And that's what he comes up with. You heard that. I didn't monkey with that. That wasn't taken out of context. He was giving his flunky, Belinda, hell for having her child in a public school because the skin-flinted son of a bitch won't pay her enough to send her child to one of those highfalutin public private schools in Atlanta, like the Westminster Academy over there off West Paces Ferry or something like that. Oh, hell no. He's a big believer in homeschooling, where children can be taught that 2 plus 2 equals a miracle, and it's 5. Yeah. So in the midst, that's what you get. He's given her hell for sending her child to a public school. She's talking about going to a PTA meeting. And, of course, you know, our public schools are just polluted with those dirty little filthy brown children. Because the dirty little filthy brown children don't deserve an education. They don't deserve to be... You know, that's hilarious. You know, I don't like how they come here to America and they want to keep talking that Mexican talk. They won't talk no English like I does so good. They need to talk English. Merkin. God bless America. Praise Jesus. They need to talk English. So they carp about immigrants not speaking English, and then they bitch about it when they try to go to the public schools to learn English. Crap. This is deemed high quality broadcasting. And this guy's syndicated all over the country. They started carrying him in, like, Pittsburgh and Erie, Pennsylvania recently. I can't imagine that there's anybody in Western Pennsylvania who hears this and goes, ah, yeah, right on there with you there, Rush. Oh, you're not. Oh, yeah. Oh, same hate, different talker. Right on there, Bortz. He sounds like a bubble in a bathtub. So with Hispanic people dying in coal mines in Utah, so that Bortz can leave the damn lights on in his room when he walks out because he's too lazy to reach for a light switch. He says, of Hispanic families, that they're the ones with sombreros. You can look at the parents and tell because the ones with sombreros can't speak English. The ones with the bandoliers full of bullets across their chests. And Belinda says, I just hope the people at this school do not listen to your show. And flunky Royal Marshall says, it's in English! And Bort says, it's in English. It's in English. And then, to top it off, Belinda, I feel so bad for your kid. You know, because the child has to go to school with those filthy, filthy, vermin-infested, disgusting little Mexicans. Never mind that they're also Hondurans and El Salvadorans and Costa Ricans and Ecuadorians and Panamanians and on, Peruvians, who've been driven here by virtue of the economic policies of the United States. Never mind all that. We don't want them going to school. We don't want them in the government schools. And by the way, in case you're keeping score, this S-CHIP program that will expire in September that provides provides health care to children in the United States, it's going to be funded on tobacco monies. And I had a nice conversation with our good friend Mark Levine on his program yesterday, and his guest, Naira Hawk from the Children's Defense Network, bless her heart, she's a smoker too. I kidded a little bit. I'm a little bit snarky. I figure I got to start smoking even heavier to be a good patriotic American. Because God knows we can't tax everybody to provide health care. Oh, hell no. No, that's for the lepers in America to do, the smokers. And we want the smokers to stop smoking, but they can't stop smoking because if they stop smoking, then the children's health care program collapses. But one of the things that that generated some opposition for the children's health care program was the fact that it might and I saw this was in one of the I think it was the Nashville City paper. I saw a discussion about this. I even chimed in myself, where these conservatives, you know, the ones that, you know, whose mouths move while they type with one hand. That S-CHIP bill, that's going to let it'll provide health care for illegals. Right Biff. Because after all, little Maria doesn't deserve to be cared for by a physician until such time as she can grow up and begin washing your toilet for you. Or little Ignacio can't be given health care as a child so he can grow up relatively healthy, at which time he can begin, you know, mowing your lawn or building your McMansions. Right, Biff, you conservative you? God, I love them. Conservatives. Hateful SOBs. Every last one of them. And because that's why Anil Bortz is on the air. That is why Neil Bortz is on the air. Because that is how conservatives think. That is how conservatives are. That's what conservatives believe. It's what they say amongst themselves when they think that no decent people are paying attention. Now, you can spot the Mexicans. They're the ones with the sombreros on and the bullets and the bandoliers across their chest. You know, and this isn't some sort of isolated incident. This pig Bortz has said, you know, other sleazy things. back in June, as documented by Media Matters for America, mediamatters.org. Back June 11th, a caller asked Bortz, why can't we just load them on planes and keep on loading them until they're back? And Bortz said, we're not going to throw these people out of airplanes with taco-shaped parachutes. Then on the June 18th, he says, I don't care if Mexicans pile up against that fence like tumbleweeds in the Santa Ana winds in Southern California. Let them, you know? Then just run a couple of taco trucks up and down the line, and somebody's going to be a millionaire out of that. Har, 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 har. Boy, that's some dang funny. I don't care who you are. That's funny. No, it isn't. No, it isn't. Cox Broadcasting syndicates Bortz, and he is syndicated across the country in a number of stations because there's a market for it. Because there is a market for ignorance. There is a market for prejudice. There's a market for bigotry. There's a market for hate. It's mostly manifested by pasty, doughy-faced, pudgy, middle-aged white dudes who somehow or another can't maintain sexual function without thinking of hating someone else. Hey, wait a minute, Bortz. Tell me another Mexican joke. I've almost got it. And it's this kind of stuff that lets you know that this country's doomed. Just screwed, blued, and tattooed. Did Don Imus, and this is not a defense of Imus by any stretch of the imagination, did Don Imus say anything? Yeah, he said, nappy-headed hoes, and it was reprehensible, and it was awful, and it was sleazy, and it was nasty, and an appropriate remedy was taken against Don Imus. Because somehow or another, a determination was made that that's not the kind of thing that Don Imus should be saying. When every day the microphone opens and the little light goes on for Neil Bortz, and he will, I guarantee you, as sure as God made little green apples and it don't rain in Indianapolis in the summertime, as the saying goes, he will say something that is 100 times more vile than anything uttered by Don Imus at any point in time. And Don Imus was, of course, a vile racist pig. But it was not tolerated because I guess Don Imus operates out of New York City. Down Atlanta where Bortz is, we expect it. We expect it. That's Southern humor. That's our humor. He don't mean nothing by it. I mean, he's probably got some Mexicans working for him, and he pays them good. Probably pays them $5-6 an hour. Yeah. Would you be surprised to find out that, you know, that's who takes care of Neil Bortz's lawn or scrubs his toilet? I wouldn't either. So that's where we begin tonight. Right-wing hate. And we're not done. I hate to sit here and act like I'm some sort of a prophet or prognosticator, but every now and then I get one right and I can prove it to you. We'll do it maybe on the way back. Lots of stuff tonight as we wrap up the week here on the Horn. I hope you'll stick around for all of it. Offer your comments to 304-658-5453 or 866-877. This is how bad a... 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Too many numbers banging around in my brain. That's what messing with all this technology will do to you. Jump right in. You're welcome to. We'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Obviously need to address the issue of the Saddam Hussein execution. Have seen the video that was taken on a cell phone, or have read about the circumstances surrounding the execution. It's pretty evident that the absolutely worst thing that could have happened with the carrying out of the sentence after the long trial of Saddam Hussein happened. And if we had sat down and made a list and said, all right, here's a list of six or seven different things that could happen, what would be the very, very worst thing that could happen, not only for us, for the United States, but for the world and for the Iraqis themselves? And it seems to me that if not first, then definitely second would have been what indeed did happen.
The Dr. Bill O'Brien Show, Tuesday to Thursday, noon to 2 Eastern, here on the Head On Radio Network.
I never thought my daughter and I would ever think the same thing is cool.
At home, my boys are like a wrecking ball. But when they volunteer, they're actually shaping things up.
Hey, they planted trees at the local park. Clean the place up.
She makes new friends. She has a great time.
My son loves it. He's contributing.
These are nice kids.
The Are You Into It volunteer program is a great way for you and your kids to make a difference in the community while making friends. So, if you're into it, or you think your kid might be, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH. Or visit our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
We can't get him to clean his room, but he loves volunteering.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
Finns? People from Finland? No, that's not Neil Bortz's problem. It's the Mexicans. But that's the way he feels. You know, Mexicans to the left, Mexicans right, you get the idea. 27 minutes before the hour. Now, I mentioned, it was Wednesday night. It was prayer meeting when I told you the story about what had been said on another right-wing hate program. You know, I feel a little gossipy doing these stories, but you don't hear this stuff, and we do because of the nature of the listenership to progressive radio. You guys are really sharp, and you will go where you can to hear rational, reasonable discussion, whether it's staying with the horn all day long, with Mark Levine, Guy James. You know, I listen to Guy James every now and then. A lot of the times I'm doing my prep and I don't get a chance, but I get to tune in every now and then. And, you know, when I hear Guy talking about his frustration with the Democratic Party and their failure to do what they were sent to Congress and given a majority to do. It's like, it, you know, guy's so solid. He's so down to earth. He's so Midwestern. You know, all of those classic American Midwestern values. You know, when you hear guy, it's like hearing America's heartbreak. To hear, you know, how our party has betrayed those values. And it, you know, I'm so impressed with what goes on here, the intellect, you know, and I'm talking about, you know, really tall, really smart guy intellect of Mark Levine. When you sit down for a conversation and listen in to Dr. Bill, and he's had some school university stuff taking his time lately. So it's been kind of hard for him to be on the air. But, you know, people will look around to try to find reasonable discussion and dialogue and conversation. Sometimes I'm, you know, I listen to the other people on this network and I'm halfway ashamed of myself. Because I just get behind this microphone and I rant and I rave like some sort of idiot. You mean, Bob, you mean there's more than one kind? But, you know, Joe Vecchio, coming home from the third shift and staying up and practically putting toothpicks in his eyelids to stay coherent and be awake to bring you one more hour. John Fox has been away for a little while, but John Fox will be back, you know, these last few days. You know, because all these people are working people on the horn. Got other jobs. And John went back for, I guess, a four-day gig of what he called being a rock and roll pig. His words, not mine. Doing, I guess, roadie work for a rock show somewhere around him in the Sydney area. And he'll be back. He'll be back on Monday. All these people, all these minds, all this goodness, all this decency, all this concern, all this compassion. All this reality, and the best that the other side has is to take complete control of the airwaves so that somebody like Neil Bortz can say that you can tell who the Mexicans are at a PTA meeting because they've got sombreros and bandoliers with bullets on. You know, the story, the study that came out from the Center for American Progress, what, a month ago that we talked with, who was it, Mark Lloyd, about here on the program. My God! It you know, it shone a light on the nature of broadcasting today. Is there anybody out there, and basically the story said, you know, the right wing blather controls is all over the radio airwaves, not because liberal talk can't compete against it, that there's something ideologically inferior to it. No, hell no. But because that's what the ownership of these stations want. They want to present angry white men or angry skinny blonde white women to America, spewing hatred as a means of making money. Phew. Wow. You know, just wow. And so, you know, people on the horn have day jobs. When any one of them put head to head against a Neil Bortz or a Laura Ingraham or a Michael Savage, ratings-wise, could take any one of those out behind the building and whip their asses. Absolutely, beyond a shadow of a doubt. Now, like I said, Wednesday night, I referenced a story from Fox News Radio, because they've got a talk radio network, too. Can't swing a dead cat in right-wing land without finding millions of dollars being poured into talk radio. While we have to scramble along and beg and plead and implore, and you know, and you come through in heroic fashion from month to month to keep something like the horn going, and you know, frankly, you came through in July, you got to come through in August and September, and we're trying, and we appreciate it. There's a button there at headonradionetwork.com, and you know, there's a mailing address if you don't like to deal with PayPal. And of course, that mailing address is Head On, and it is 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, that means personal mailbox, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. But anyway, Fox News Radio has their own talk radio outlet, and you heard the audio this past Wednesday of Angry Rich, who is the executive producer to John Gibson, who is an uber-Christian, who will be defending Christmas about the same time that the day after Thanksgiving sales begin. Because, you know, us secular progressives, we're out there trying to kill Santa Claus and throttle the baby Jesus. Yeah, you heard, if you were listening to this program, you heard Angry Rich call John Edwards' wife a whore. And what he said, actually, he said that he whored her cancer out for fundraising purposes. John Edwards did. And I told you then that when they got called on their hate and they got called on their monstrosity, that their first complaint would be to say, well, he didn't say really that she was a whore. He said her cancer was a whore. Right? Yeah. So that's so naturally, that's what you, that, lo and behold, that's what happened, because I just happen to have here in front of me audio from that great American, John Gibson, his August 7th program, and you'll hear it go down just as I predicted that it would. Not because I'm such a great intellect, but because these people are so damn predictable.
I'm looking for this today, right now, Angry Rich. Then Elizabeth Edwards today, in some obscure publication, and I can't find what that publication is now, but what she said was, trying to explain why is it that John Edwards' campaign is lagging behind others. And she said, well, it's just going to happen. We can't make him a woman, and we can't make him black. Either of those two things will get you a lot of press, and that gets you a lot of fundraising. Wow. Can't make him a woman, and you can't make him black. Oh, speaking of which, Angry Rich.
Yeah.
It's kind of an unfortunate moment yesterday.
Wait.
Well, it wasn't yesterday,
Wait.
When was that?
It was an unfortunate moment. Did you catch that? Angry Rich, who didn't have a slip of the tongue, who said this completely seriously, utterly deliberately, called Mrs. Edwards a whore, had an unfortunate moment. It was unfortunate. You know, but that's the way right-wingers are. He deliberately said this, but to say it's unfortunate, well, let's look at the etymology of the word unfortunate. Unfortunate means a lack of fortune. Fortune is luck. Luck is something that happens to you, good or bad. Unbidden, unlooked for, unsought, and it just, you know, it happens. Bad luck, good luck. And when you cite something like that, luck, well, you're saying that you really didn't have a hand in what happened. So it was an unfortunate incident.
Last week.
You made some offhand comment about Edwards and the way Edwards has...
Now, wait, okay, there it is again. You made some offhand comment about Edwards. No, you were listening to this program Wednesday evening. You heard it. Was there anything offhand about what Angry Rich said about Mrs. Edwards? To make an offhand comment is to be cruising along saying one thing, and you know, but it's like, and you throw it out there, and then you move on with your regular topic. Well, you know, John Edwards isn't a very good human being, you know, he's blah, 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 and by the way, his wife's a whore, and, you know, that's an offhand comment. But you heard the audio Wednesday evening, right here. And you know there was nothing offhand about it. He deliberately, intentionally called John Edwards' wife a whore. But, again, it's right-wing talk radio, and that's great radio in America as far as right-wing radio ownership is concerned. Isn't it? Let's continue.
Shall we say employed his wife in the campaign.
That's true, John. I sure did.
Yeah. And taking a little grief about that?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay. Let's be specific about what you meant when you said, and I'll euphemize.
You can say it.
You said that Edwards was using his
wife. Caught a little grief. That's enough. I caught a little grief about it. Should have been, I'm sorry, redneck moment, southern boy moment. Should have been horsewhipped in an alley somewhere for what he said. It's just true. Mrs. Edwards hasn't said anything to earn his wrath. Mrs. Edwards hasn't said anything to bring on his disdain. She hadn't insulted Angry Rich. You know, that's shorthand, Angry Rich White Guy. No. He just opposes John Edwards' politics, so therefore, in his world, it's okay to refer to John Edwards' beloved wife, who has cancer and will die from it, as a whore. It's okay. And the sponsors of Fox News Talk Radio... Ho, ho, ho. Boy, I tell you what, that Angry Rich, he's a funny one. I don't care who you are. That's funny. Right?
I think that I am familiar with the fact that you are going to ignore this particular problem until it swims up and bites you on the ass.
If only it would. If only it would. See, I don't want to censor anybody. I'm not a censor kind of guy. I don't want anybody, you know, chased off the air because they hold a differing political view. No, damn it, no. I want, in fact, I want to have discussions with those people. I want to find out whose ideas are better. Is it better, for instance, for George Bush to follow through on his veto of the Children's Health Insurance Program and leave several million children in this country uncovered and unable to go to the doctor when they're sick? I want to know if that's a better idea than it is to up the cigarette tax to make sure that those children remain covered. I want to know, I want to have a discussion with some right winger maybe about whether or not it's better to bow and scrape and kowtow and toady to the tobacco industry, whom I despise, or whether it's better to reverence life and children in this country. You know, after all, out in Colorado, for instance, the a group of reproductive health advocates intervened in the Supreme Court either yesterday or today, trying to stop a ballot initiative in Colorado by the weirdos who want to make a law out of the following language. Be it enacted by the people of the state of Colorado. Section 1. Article 2 of the Constitution of the state of Colorado is amended by the addition of a new section to read Section 31, Person Defined. As used in Sections 3, 6, and 25 of Article 2 of the state Constitution, the terms person or persons shall include any human being from the moment of, wait for this, Agnes, didn't tell you about this one. Person shall include any human being from the moment of fertilization from the moment of fertilization. Now, these people want to extend legal coverage. Now, bear in mind, as right-wing Coloradans, they can't extend basic human rights to same-sex couples who want the full extent of constitutional rights and privileges and duties. They can't do that, by God, but they can extend the full rights, duties, and responsibilities of personhood, citizenship, to an egg! I want to have this discussion. I want to hear somebody sit, on the phone with me or whatever, explain to me how it's pro-life for their man, George Bush, to veto an insurance bill that protects living children. Because, I've tried, and I'm a smoker, and I don't appreciate being the leper of the damn world and having to carry the Children's Health Insurance Program on my damn back. Because I think if children's health insurance is important in the United States, it is by God important enough for all of us to pay for it. And that's me, and that's Agnes, and that's you, your loved ones, it's Bill Gates, it's the billionaire boys club that barely pays any taxes at all. I mean everybody. Put a tax on something that's ubiquitous within this culture. Put a tax on Coca-Cola. All soft drinks. After all, we've had to bust our ass to get the damn soft drink machines out of our schools because they're poisoning our kids. The onslaught, look for the data. The onslaught of juvenile diabetes and obesity brought on by high fructose corn syrup is enough to, you want to talk about the health risk. We got to make the smokers quit smoking. Hell, as soon as Margie's throat's healed up, I'm buying her a carton of Lucky Strikes so she can help insure the other children. It's what we got to do, us smokers. We're the last patriots in America. Because nobody else is willing to pony up and pay. But it's worth it. It is worth it to insure children. And I want to talk to some of these crazy bastards who think it isn't. Some of these crazy farts who scream that government, it's not government's legitimate business to see to the well-being of its citizenry. Holy cats. But, of course, we won't be having those discussions. The wingnuts are gone. The wingnuts won't stand up and defend their president anymore. It's very hard to find any of them who will defend their hateful wingnut policies. And so, there will be another day when Angry Rich on the John Gibson Show will come call some other politician's wife a whore, or maybe allege that they are some politician's spouse is addicted to drugs, or engaged in ritual human sacrifice. There's really nothing to stop these SOBs because no one wants to, and because liberals will not put pressure on the people who pay to keep these SOBs on the air. They're all these right-wing talkers, they're all free market, oh, it's the miracle of the free market, the free market controls, the free market will take care of everything. But then they don't want to play. They don't want to work. They don't want to compete in a free market. Because God knows they don't want somebody following Neil Bortz for 3 hours who will call him on his BS. Who will spot on note him for the bigot that he is. Or suggest on the public airwaves that Angry Rich should be taken out behind a barn and horsewhipped for referring to a man's wife as a whore. But he should be. I would settle for John Gibson being, you know, just canceled. Not because his politics are wrong, but because his humanity is. These are the public airwaves. Now, I could show them to you. I've got news stories in, you know, from the American Family Association talking about how they want to protect children from indecency. And another action alert from the American Family Association saying that Red Book Magazine is endorsing a hedonistic sexual lifestyle. But oddly enough, I don't have an action alert from the American Family Association that says, warning, during daytime family-oriented programming hours, right-wing talker calls one man's wife a whore. What happens when you're going down the road and you got Fox News Radio tuned in and it's John Gibson and Angry Rich comes on and calls and says, well, you know, she's a whore. What happens? Boy, then you got some explain. Daddy, what's a whore? That's a fun conversation. Let's go to the phone. Susan joins us from Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Well, I thought I'd get in on the smokers conversation.
Okay.
Being a former three-pack-a-day, 30-year habit, and I also have a husband who is quite likely going to die from COPD, mm-hmm. also from cigarettes. Nevertheless, I agree with you. I think smokers are getting a raw deal. They're being made to be the country's whipping boy, and I don't like it. If kids are being, our kids are worth being insured, like you said, they should be insured by everybody.
But it is not worth, Susan, it is not worth, and I don't want to be misunderstood in the least, it is not worth letting this program die.
No, I agree there.
If I, as a smoker,
I think
have to...
everybody
yeah.
should.
It's everybody's responsibility. It's not the it's not the sanctimonious, holier-than-thou non-smokers. They don't get a pass because they're good enough to be non-smokers. Why should they get a pass? They don't.
No.
So as soon as we re-extend this program, I think smokers should say, okay, we're willing to carry this program for a while, but by God, we want the rest of America in here with us. So either start smoking...
Or just start ponying up.
Yeah. Or pony it up and get serious about it.
Yeah. Because it's, you know, let's face it, kids... It's your kids.
Yeah. It's my kids.
Yeah. It's everybody's
my kids.
My
kids are covered under chips.
Yeah. And
so,
if my kids were young enough, so would they. But, yeah, it's just... You know, my grandkids would be covered under it. I just think it's wrong to make the smokers the whipping boy of the world, and I think the pendulum is going too far.
Well, the thing is, it's funny. We've got to smoke to carry programs like this, Susan. We've got to smoke. We have to smoke.
Yeah.
I was thinking about quitting. I can't quit now. I owe it to my country to keep smoking.
No, Bob, please quit.
No, I owe it to my country. I want the children to be insured. I have to keep smoking.
Fine, send money to the government, say, here, apply it to chips, but don't...
But it doesn't work that way. You can't donate to the S-CHIP program. The only way the S-CHIP program can be funded is for people to smoke or start smoking. It's the only way.
Quit, buy somebody else cigarettes, but please... For your own health, quit.
Can't. Just can't.
Pretty please.
Well, you know, I wish. But, you know, I think it's too important. But seriously, let's get this, you know, I want the president's veto overridden. And we've got enough votes, oddly enough. We got enough votes in the Senate to override a presidential veto. We don't have enough votes in the House. So we got it. When he vetoes it, we've got to get it overridden. Then we've got to get on Congress and say, listen, if children's health care is important enough, to have,
yeah,
it's important enough to pay for.
Yeah.
And frankly, you know, this is about raising, you know, the House version of the bill, as Mark noted yesterday, raises the tax on a pack of cigarettes to a buck. Now, cigarettes are declining sales.
I also think, Bob, that there is a wider issue. The government has made cigarettes and liquor the whipping boy, especially cigarettes. And the income, because it's, quote, a sin tax.
Yeah.
From almost time immemorial. Especially since the findings about the cancer risk has come out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, okay, yeah, they're dangerous. They're addictive. Yes. Don't smoke. I really wish you would quit. Because every time I hear my husband take a breath, I know what it's going to do to you. I really do.
So do I. I watched my father die, okay?
Yeah.
One of the most horrible deaths that I can imagine. And confirmed by the doctor is one of the most, you know, there's no good way to go, but that's one of the particularly awful ones.
Yeah, try COPD.
That's what got him, Susan.
Oh, okay. I thought it was heart problems. I didn't realize. Okay. The thing is, but they're making all of these communities all across the nation are making these incredibly discriminatory laws against people who smoke. It's getting to the point where you literally cannot go outside of your house to smoke.
Yeah.
And that's wrong.
Yeah, it is.
You're impinging on someone else's civil rights. Now, come on, folks. You cannot impinge on somebody else's liberties here. It's basic constitutional.
Oh, but I'm impinging on their liberties with my filthy cigarette smoke. Now all the toxic
outside.
Yeah, no, especially if I'm outside, because then it's going straight into the air, and it'll impinge on their freedom to breathe toxins from automobiles and you know, you get the idea. But that's not what, right? But that's not. It's really not what this is about.
Well, yeah, I realize that, but what I'm talking about is the broader issue. You can't sacrifice one to save the other.
But we gladly will. You know, the drunks
it's
and the smokers. It is wrong. But the drunks and the smokers are what is keeping this country going.
Yeah, unfortunately, and it's wrong.
Now, if we can put a 60 cents extra, 60 cents of extra tax on a pack of cigarettes, why can't we put a dime on a bottle of pop?
Yeah, that's not, quote, food to me.
No, it's...
To me, food is bread, it's flour, it's meat, that type of thing. Pop, people can survive without it.
Yeah, just as they can survive without booze and cigarettes.
Exactly. Put a tax on soda pop.
I mean, I think, you know, because that's a product that's ubiquitous enough and bought in sufficient numbers by all Americans that we could thereby, you know, I mean, even as long as it doesn't have caffeine in it, even the Mormons drink pop. They'll drink 7-Up. They'll drink Sprite. They'll drink...
And besides that, and I'm speaking as an avowed petaholic, put a tax on it. I would be more than happy to pay it.
Yeah. Especially if it was going to something like universal health care.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know,
anyway,
let's get...
that's all right.
I appreciate it. I really do. Thank you, Susan.
Well, you have a nice weekend.
I'm going to try. We'll be playing with more high-tech fun.
Yeah. Give Marg my love and tell her to scarf down all of the ice cream while she can. It probably won't make her throat feel better, but scarf it down while she's got the chance.
And all guys chilling said amen.
Okay.
Thanks, Susan. Have a wonderful
bye
weekend.
Bye.
Bye.
You too.
Okay, so we'll go and we'll do the news. Hey, nice phone quality, huh? So far, the fine folks at CityNet are doing a bang-up job. Proud to be working with them. CityNet.net. It's time for the news. You want to jump in? Go right ahead. 304-658-5453. 877-443-2366. This is the Head On Radio Network. This is America's liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid.
friends. Hope it'll never stop.
We're beginning to see some signs of progress.
6 years in, now the Democrats win. They will still fund the war. But they say one more year ought to do it. One more year, and then we're through it.
There's a new Congress in town.
But George Bush says no.
I will veto if it comes to my desk.
Oh, they give the money, but he runs the show. To him, you don't say no. You get no say, so veto.
My veto would be sustained.
Oh, he says one more surge ought to get him. Escalation to win him. One more fall.
We're going to win.
This is the Quality News Network. The United Nations Security Council voted unanimously to increase the UN's role in Iraq. It would involve promoting talks between the various political and ethnic groups. In Afghanistan, Taliban leaders and four South Korean officials began negotiations for the release of 21 members of a South Korean missionary group held by militants for 3 weeks. Two of the hostages have already been killed by the Taliban. CNN reports that U.S. military intelligence officials are assessing what would happen to Pakistan's nuclear weapons if General Pervez Musharraf loses power. He took power in 1999 after a coup and is facing growing political opposition. North Korean leaders warned the U.S. to halt joint exercises with South Korea, or it could bring an end to Pyongyang's cooperation in ending its nuclear weapons program. The U.S. says the troops hold joint exercises every year without incident. Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr is in Iran and is not in complete control of his militant militia back in Iraq. After a U.S. commander made that statement, however, the cleric spokesman denied al-Sadr left the country. In Utah, rescue crews heard no signs of life after lowering a tiny microphone deep into a hole. They drilled the hole near where they believed six miners were trapped after a collapse Monday. A mine official, however, says rescuers remain hopeful. They may have simply drilled into the wrong mine chamber. In Indiana, an accident killed three construction workers as they dug an air shaft for an underground coal mine. Authorities say the workers may have fallen into that shaft. In Minneapolis, a total of 8 bodies have been recovered so far after last week's I-35 West Bridge collapse. According to the Justice Department report on crime, in 2005, African Americans were the victims of nearly half of the murders in the U.S. However, they only make up 13% of the population. The statistics also revealed that most murder victims were killed by someone of their own race. The White House vows it will go ahead with a crackdown on illegal immigration without Congress. As part of the executive office plan, sanctions will be imposed on employers who hire illegal immigrants. Also, employees who cannot clear up Social Security number problems within 30 days can be fired. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news coming up.
Hey, what's he doing?
What?
That guy is changing his oil in the street and letting it run right in the storm drain, which pollutes the bay. I totally wouldn't serve him that.
Dude, what can we do?
Call 1-800-CLEANUP to report anyone dumping oil, antifreeze, or paint in the street.
This way, fools like that can be fined.
Tell everyone to call 1-800-CLEANUP.
Taking care of the marine sanctuary is your duty. From Mayos at Monterey High.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At the Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to a million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
The Space Shuttle Endeavour linked up with the International Space Station today after doing a backflip so NASA could check it for any damage from its liftoff. A powerful storm that swept through the Midwest has left one person dead. Some businesses and homes are without power. The latest tool to be used by suspicious spouses is the electronic toll collection system. The fast passes allow drivers to electronically be scanned and charged at toll gates without stopping. Divorce lawyers, however, have been getting court orders to view those records to prove infidelity. A Texas man is suing the online florist 1-800-Flowers. After he ordered flowers, the company sent him a thank you note, but they sent it to his home. The man's wife got the thank you note, but the flowers had been sent to another woman. The couple is divorcing. Today, the Federal Reserve put liquidity into the banking system three times. The Fed put in $19 billion, then $16, and lastly, another $3 billion. They're trying to help the financial system stabilize. The market took some wide swings today. Light sweet crude oil is currently trading at $71.47 a barrel. At the close of Wall Street, things quieted. The Dow ended down 31 points at 13,239. The Nasdaq was down 12, and the S&P was pretty much even. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Coming up on 10 minutes after the hour, and just to let you know, about an hour from now, we'll be talking with Max Blumenthal about the latest horror that he has uncovered from the religious right. Religious right, the religion industry, the frauds, the phonies, the scam artists, the snake oil salesmen, the three card Monty practitioners of spiritualism, in which there is no spirituality whatsoever. So I think you'll enjoy that conversation. That's on the way in about an hour. And I just have a question. Well, we'll go right to the phone in a second. You know the number, 304-658-5453, 877-443-2366. Either way, you pay the freight, we pay the freight. Just get in here and get yourself heard. Speak your piece. Say what's on your mind. But, no, this information that's out there that since the Bush economic miracle that includes the Ponzi scheme of the collapsing subprime mortgage market. Since that economic miracle has turned into an economic nightmare in the last few days, central banks, Federal Reserve, the European Central Bank, yada, 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 has been just pouring money into the markets. Pouring money into the system to keep them from collapsing. And I just I got one question, because now I'm not, now this is not coming from me because I'm one of them. I just want to know where I want to know if the right wingers are willing to embrace what they say they embrace, and that is the free market. Their free market is having one of its little periodic collapses, as free markets are prone to do. And I want to know why Rush Limbaugh and Neil Bortz and Savage and the rest of the conservatives aren't out there rallying their mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking troops in the streets to protest these infusions, these artificial, governmental, welfare, socialist infusions of cash into the market. Sounds like a socialized financial system to me, doesn't it to you? Because that's what it is. Can't have no socialized medicine, because then little Maria might, she might survive those childhood illnesses, and then you know how it is with those brown people. They just breed and breed and breed, and then they're putting on sombreros and wearing bandoliers with bullets on their chest to the PTA meetings. But of course, they won't be in the streets, and they won't complain about this bailout, because they don't believe in a free market. They believe in a market that is tilted toward the rich. They believe in a market that is tilted toward welfare for the wealthiest 1% of the country. Because that's whose fat is in the fire right now. You know, baby, if you go to Vegas and you sit down at the blackjack table and you push that chip over, You try touching that chip again. I'm sorry, sir. Please do not touch the bets once the bets have been placed. Cards are being dealt. But you see, free marketeer Republicans and libertarians and the like, they only believe in their free market as long as it's serving their needs. They want to pull their bets. They like, you know, they put the bet down on the roulette wheel and it's on black. No, red! No, black! Red! No! Aw, damn! That's how they are. They're dishonest and they're hypocrites. And I wouldn't trust them with a handful of caca. They've ruined everything they've touched. They took a multi-trillion dollar surplus in 2000 and turned it into a multi-trillion dollar deficit in the span of 6 short years. They wreck everything they set their hand to. Flown on an airplane lately? There's another miracle of deregulation. Hypocrites. Dirty, rotten, filthy little hypocrites is what they are. Let's go to the phone. Steady's calling. Haven't heard from our good friend Steady in a while. Hey, buddy, how are you?
Good, Bob. Great to be calling in. I missed all you at the Horde and everyone in the chat room. I'm actually sitting in Christmas Valley.
Oh, are you?
I am. I'm in Oregon and I have most of my stuff up here and made a salvage run to my friend who also left California. He's building a house in Montana, so we kind of caravaned up here from his house. And just got a lot of stuff to do and lots of time to do it up here in Big Sky. It's I'm a High Plains drifter, at least for the interim of the summer, for sure.
And is this where we have to cue the Clint Eastwood music?
Yeah.
Yeah.
High Plains drifter, that's great. Some of the stuff that you were talking about getting into there, that subprime market and the Fed's bailout, it's like the airlines in 2002. Even here in I'm in California, but on the headlines of the Los Angeles Times on September 11th, it said the airlines are failing. You know, they needed help that morning. They blamed the collapse of the airlines on the 911 attacks themselves. But we saw it on the headlines here in Los Angeles that they were already failing in 2002. I think the airlines lost $800 million, the industry as a whole, more than $1 million an hour. That's deregulation.
Mm-hmm.
That's our corporate wealth.
Well, you remember the millions that we as taxpayers threw down a rat hole after 9/11? And none of it went to shore up the airlines. It went to executives. It didn't even go to the working stiffs who make the planes go.
We did get a little Bush tax refund there, and everyone was happy about that. Oh yeah, but ultimately, we see where our tax dollars are going, and appreciate the outlet that the Horns provided me to point out to our bird dog some of the things that I see, you know, in my immediate sphere or orbit, and I'm sure it's going around in every town in USA at varying levels, depending upon, you know, how observant we are, or our time is available to be observant of these things and these people who lie, cheat, and steal. And this is what they do. And as long as we allow them, I guess, as people and citizens to do that, I think they'll continue. But Bob, your radio network is head on, man, is strong. I appreciate everything that I can do to call in here. And having left here in February and just getting back a week ago, I've got a lot to write about. I've got a lot of pictures. I want to say to everyone who wanted to see pictures of everything that I have, I still have all that stuff, and it's finally on my hard drive. I'm building a place out here in Oregon so where I can sit down and actually think and consolidate, because since, let's say, April last year when I tried to run for Congress, my life was everything I owned, and my home was just taken.
Yeah.
And I'm still on the rebound. I'm still trying to recover from that. And on the note, I went to help people who got hammered themselves by Katrina and lost everything else in a very different way. But, I'm back now, and I got blessed with the job, which allowed me to do the things that I'm going to do here in the next month. And we'll start all over again. on that note, TGIF to everybody, and you and Bob, and Agnes, I love you both, and everyone in the chat room. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Steady. Have a great weekend, and just keep at it. You're doing good stuff.
Love you. Thank you so much. Your encouragement is, I can't even tell you how helpful it's been.
Well, blessings on you, my brother. Blessings on you.
Hey, have a great weekend.
You too. Bye now.
Okay, bye for now.
Our good friend Steady calling from Christmas Valley, Oregon. 19 minutes after the hour, and let's take a little side trip, if you don't mind. First of all, an email coming in from our good friend Cindy out in the shadow of Mount St. Helens. And she says, I think nobody sane should give the lawmakers any more keys to tax us whatsoever. I think if we had universal not-for-profit health care for all, we wouldn't need to worry about the kids and pit one against the other in our society. She says, I think you're addicted to cigarettes and can't quit. I don't think it. I know it. I'm a junkie. She says, you know this in your heart. I know it in my brain, too, Cindy. And you wish you could. Sure, I do. You currently have no idea how much extra cash would be in your hands if you did. Oh, I've done the math. I really have. 1 year's worth of cigarettes is the value of one good used car. Sure. She says, it is a fact that you can quit with a doctor's help. I needed to be tranquilized, she says, to do it, but I did it in 1 month, tranquilized and cold turkey. It worked for everyone in my family that smoked. She says, we save a lot of money and it really helps. The first year or two that we quit, we would buy ourselves a reward, but the lifestyle of non-smoking has set in over the years and it does not occur to us anymore now. In fact, we can't remember the anniversary. She says, my mother died from cancer caused by smoking and I sat at her bedside until she did. It was horrific. Your wife and kids don't deserve that, Bob, she says. If anything would make you do that, do it. That thought should. I don't think that. And she says, I respect your privacy on it, and she wouldn't call it in. It's okay. I don't mind talking about it. I know what's going to be required for me to quit. At this point in time, part and parcel of me quitting would be walking away from this for a while, from 18-hour days. I don't want to do that right now. The fact of the matter is, what would be required for me to quit smoking? I think there should be smoking cessation programs that are every bit as serious as booze and drug programs. I mean, 6 weeks inpatient. It's either that or me and a sharp knife and a loincloth sitting in the middle of the desert doing some navel gazing for a while till the hallucinations set in. That really is me and quitting. Because this is an addiction that gets all the way down to the bottom of your bones. So, the business with the Children's Health Insurance Program, and thank you, Cindy. It's offered sincerely, and I accept it that way as well. It's sad. It is sad to see one segment of society demonized on the one hand and yet relied upon as the salvation of a health insurance program. And you can bet your ass that somewhere in the halls of Congress that was a conscious decision. They never contemplated putting a tax on pop. They never contemplated nothing. They certainly did. Hey, I got an idea. How about a windfall profits tax increase on stocks? Let those people, the gamblers, let the Vegas people, the Wall Streeters, let them pay for children's health insurance. Here's another novel idea. If you own an automobile, like that one good used car a year that Cindy referenced, if you own an automobile, you have to go to your state or your county courthouse, depending on how your individual state scheme works. You got to go there, and you got to pay property taxes on that car every year to keep a tag on it. Right? Sure you do. And those rates vary, but they are personal property taxes. And you pay real property taxes on your home. If you own a home, you pay real property taxes on that. And you pay personal property taxes on your boat. Hell, in this state, you're supposed to pay personal property taxes on your pets. No kidding. So tell me why. Tell me why people aren't paying personal property taxes on the contents of their stock portfolios. That's personal property. That is personality within the meaning of the law. You know, there are things out there that should be taxed. Because, after all, you know, we pay taxes on booze, beer, wine, cigarettes, and as Susan noted, they are referred to often by a shorthand of sin taxes. Well, is there any greater sin, if you will, than being heavily invested in a company that, for instance, in foreign countries, blows away union organizers when the workers there try to get up, stand on their own hind legs and demand that they be treated as human beings, like Coca-Cola does in places like India and Colombia? There's a sin. If you have stock in Halliburton, which has been part and parcel of the slaughter of upwards of a million innocent, unarmed Iraqi civilians, couldn't we put a sin tax on that? Oh, there he goes, that Bob, he's a tax and spend liberal. No. I mean, I'm not even going to tell you that I wish there were no taxes, because taxes are what we pay for living in something approaching a functioning civilized society. Support the roads. They support health care programs for the elderly, but not all Americans. Education. It used to support infrastructure before, you know, it was all given away to the richest 0.1% in America. Yeah, sure. I believe in taxation. I believe in supporting that which supports me. Right? Yeah. Okay, enough. I want to run down to Texas. If you don't mind. Charming little story. You know, we have these foo-frahs about the Pledge of Allegiance. And if you know the history of your Pledge of Allegiance, you know that under God was not added to the pledge until a considerable long time after it was first written by a Baptist minister with socialist leanings from Massachusetts toward the end of the 19th century. You know that because you're smart and you're liberal and you're progressive and, you know, you're not a knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing ditto monkey. Well, they say that they have to say the Pledge of Allegiance in schools all over the country. And they have to say it in Texas, too. But in Texas, you don't just have to say the Pledge of Allegiance to the United States flag, because after all, it's Texas. And Texas is just barely, you know, grudgingly a member of the United States of America. Well, from the Houston Chronicle, Texas students will have four more words to remember when they head back to class this month and begin reciting the state's... Oh, Jesus. I've read this a million times and it still makes me go, oh, you know, every time I see it. The state's Pledge of Allegiance. That's right, they've got a state Pledge of Allegiance. And this year's Texas legislature, which is allowed to meet only every 2 years, because apparently if they met any more frequently, they would do even more bizarre, squirrely, screwed-up crap like this. This year's legislature added the phrase, "One state under God," to the pledge, which, the Houston Chronicle reports, is a part of a required morning ritual in Texas public schools, along with the pledge to the U.S. flag, and a moment of silence. This was the brainchild of State Representative Debbie Riddle, sponsor of the bill, who apparently didn't think there was anything else in Texas that was worth her time. Now, Texas education system has been raped and pillaged since the governorship of George W. Bush and the following governorship of Rick Goodhair Perry, as Molly Ivins used to refer to him, Goodhair. But she said it had always bothered her that God was omitted in the state's pledge. Personally, this is a quote, personally, I felt like the Texas pledge had a big old hole in it, and it occurred to me, you know what, we need to fix that. Our Texas pledge is perfectly okay like it is, with the exception of acknowledging that just as we are one nation under God, we are one state under God as well. Holy mackerel. Barry Lynn, of course, is executive director of Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, and he said, most Texans do not need to say the new version of the pledge in order to be either patriotic or religious. This is the kind of politicking of religion that disturbs many Americans, including those who are deeply religious. Now, the law took effect on June 15th, and the Texas Education Agency has sent out a blast email reminding school districts about the change earlier this week. Make sure those little heathens say under God in the Texas pledge, or we'll find some Texas mommy to stone them or drown them, or some good Republican to drag them behind a truck. Rebecca Suarez is a spokeswoman for the Houston Independent School District, and she said they'll be sending a letter about the change. They'll be sending a letter home to parents when their children return to school, reminding them that their children must say under God in the Texas pledge. And they'll have a flyer with the pledge's revised wording. Now, I guess Texas school children scored in like the 99.9th percentile of all the no child's behind left standardized testing, because Texas has nothing better to worry about in its educational system than making sure children say that Texas's flag is under God, just like the American one. Holy. And by the way, don't worry. Little children who object to saying the pledge or making reference to God, they can bring a written note from home excusing them from participating. That's how free they are in Texas. And of course, then the little child can go out for recess and have the holy snot stomped out of him or her for being a weirdo. Why won't you say under God? They told me at church, you got to say under God or you ain't under God, and again, Jesus won't like you no more. Now, here's the shocking part. Texas isn't the only state that has its own Pledge of Allegiance. The other states include Michigan, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, and Kentucky. And Mississippi and Louisiana mention God in their pledges. That's why Katrina missed Mississippi and Louisiana, because they say God in their state pledge of allegiance. Oh, wait, it didn't. Kentucky lays claim to being blessed with grace from on high. But this is disturbing. Alabama has a pledge. You know, they never made that. I never had to say it growing up as a child in what Neil Bortz would call the government schools. No, not me. I didn't have to. But the thing is, Alabama's Pledge of Allegiance doesn't mention God. Somebody's got to get a memo to the Alabama Baptist Convention. This has to be remedied. I mean, this is pressing. God might not like Alabama anymore if they don't say under God in their state Pledge of Allegiance. You know, why, in all honesty, why is a fool, an outright idiot, a bubble-headed biddy like State Representative Debbie Riddle, Republican from Tomball, Texas. Tomball, T-O-M-B-A-L-L, Tomball, Texas. It's just about 20 miles from Fred Ball, a little bit north of Sam Ball. Tomball, Texas. What's wrong with the people who elected her? Because you know how she was elected. I believe that marriage is a sacred institution between one man and one woman, and I believe that we need God in our classrooms, and I believe that the Republican Party is the only path to salvation, and I have conservative family values, and I love the little stem cells. You know, I've got some at home, and I talk to them all the time. I love them little stem cells. They're so precious. They're like little tiny snowflakes. I mean, you know the Republican drill. The Republican drivel. And that's it. That's how she got into office. And all this time, I just felt like the Texas Pledge had a big old hole in it. I'm not making this up. This is a quote from her. I just felt like the Texas Pledge had a big old hole in it because it wasn't acknowledging God. Mother. Let's go to the phones and talk to Luke. Calling from Knoxville. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
Well, Bob, I'm just being on the end of this time. My question, though, is how did Judge Roy Moore allow this to happen?
I don't know. Something bad is going on in Alabama. Judge Roy must be off his meds or on his meds or, yeah, missing the ball a little bit.
I tell you, that just wears you out. Well, I sent you my stories. We ain't going to go into them tonight, but see, you thought you had a dysfunctional city.
I think they're going to be...
See who's still in office by the next election.
I think they're going to be brawling in the streets in Knoxville by the next election, Luke.
They did that 50 years ago. That was nothing big. No, I saw something today in the Washington Post on one of their talks with the reporters. And somebody wrote in, and I had forgotten this, and I just want to read part of this to you, just real quick.
Okay.
Said, isn't this the same General Petraeus who wrote an op-ed before the 2004 election saying that the training of the Iraqi people, the Iraqi army, was going well? Isn't this the same General Petraeus who essentially read from the litany of the GOP that, you know, a whole bunch of things that, as we know now, are not true? You know, all the deaths are down. Just ignore those dead bodies sitting over on the corner. You know how that is. And isn't this the same General Petraeus who, amazingly enough, was in charge of this thing about, what is it, 190,000 AK-47s?
That did kind of happen on him. Yeah, that really was. That was on Petraeus' watch, wasn't it, Luke?
Yeah, he was the one in charge of that. And it's like I say, it's the one thing you've always noticed about this thing. I saw yesterday with the, I'm trying to think of the right verb this time. What's the right adjective this time? I guess it would probably be Tater Tot Brain.
Yeah.
Was having his little thing. And somebody asked him about responsibility, I think it was. And, you know, when he was asking about Gonzo. You know, and it's one of those things, it's like, if you watch the whole of this thing, you find out that being competent will get you fired. Being totally blind syncopant will get you promoted as high as you can go.
Well, that's the way it works. I mean, didn't... really, the only
thing... Well, Shinseki told the truth. How dare you? Get out. You know?
Well, the only thing that remains for Fredo Gonzalez is to be given the Presidential Medal of Freedom, isn't it?
Oh, I tell you, shoot. He probably keeps a box of them in his desk.
No, I know. Gives them out in Cracker Jack boxes. Gives them out at Halloween.
Day.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? It's one of those things that I think, you know, when people look at it more back on the history of it, is this is, you know, they were talking yesterday on one of the shows, talking about, you know, what this supposed to be the responsibility group. It's like, this is the irresponsibility group. You know, the buck stops nowhere.
I know.
I mean, the buck apparently is like Forrest Gump traveling from one end of the country to the other. It don't stop. It just keeps going back and forth. You know.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like, well, like I say, we you know, talking about Shinseki, and then you remember when Abizade finally asked questions, well, got to get him out of there. We had Jay Garner, who actually was going to make some fairly small but positive changes.
He came over there wanting to have him some elections and stuff.
He wanted elections like in
16. Yeah, don't unpack, Jay.
Yeah, that's what it was. Was it Cheney said, don't even bother to unpack. We're sending the Viceroy over. You know, and that's when we got.
Yeah, and when Negroponte shows up, then
death squads follow right behind.
That's when the death squads bloom. Yeah, just like mushrooms after a rain in the poop piles.
Well, wasn't it amazing? Wasn't that the exact same thing happened when in Nicaragua, when Negroponte went down there?
Everywhere John Negroponte goes, death, doom, and destruction follow in his wake. I mean, geez, just give him the cloak and the sickle and have done with it.
Get him the skull mask. I mean, the only way he could be any more perfect for this is if he looked like Chertoff.
Well, yeah, right. That's what I mean. He's straight out of Monty Python's The Meaning of Life. The salmon moose, you know, and five thousand Iraqis drop dead.
You know, I mean, I'm sorry we're having to say this with humor, but you know what I mean. It's one of those things. It's like, you know, when you sit and look at this, you're just kind of like, you know, have some people, you know, does everybody turn their oxygen off and we're all just kind of holding our breath? You know.
But look, I mean, we know what's going to happen in September.
Oh, I mean, it's already been written. I'm sure it has.
Sure. And look.
Speechwriters are polishing it up.
Thomas Friedman's column has already been written. You know, he'll call for another Friedman unit. Another 6 months.
Two more Friedman units, probably. That'll carry it right to the election.
Yeah, you've got to backdate it to January 20th, 2009. So that's actually more like three Friedman units and change.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, like I say, because, you know, Tater Top Brain has already decided he is not going to pull anybody out, whoever it is, because he doesn't want to be called, I lost the war. It's like, you know, it's like saying, I still think in this next year, every time we have to refer to it, Mr. Bush's war, or W's war.
You know, you, me, and most of the people who listen to this program could qualify as high-paid Democratic strategists just by teaching them how to talk plain English. You know,
it's like we talked the other night with the fellow there at the AFL-CIO convention, Skyber. He made such an impression because he wasn't using nothing fancy. He just told his story.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he wasn't. I know. Sometimes, I mean, a politician can't help it. You know what I mean? It's like we've always said. You know, Joe Biden, the red light. Joe Biden starts talking. You know, but it's sometimes just talk like a human being. It's a strain for them, but try.
Well, did you see the and they weren't exactly there for public consumption, but the panel discussion on Logo last night was fascinating.
I've seen little bits and pieces.
You know, once again, Dennis Kucinich proves that he's the only Democrat running.
It was
moving to see because he sat there in in total comfort, total candor, total honesty, and then somebody that Wonkette shows up with a comment that says, "Greetings to your planet from my planet, Dennis. How long have you been a hippie?" You know, Dennis is talking about the real transformative power of human energy, the human mind, the human heart, and human love. And it's a comment not so much about Dennis Kucinich, Luke, as it is about the American psyche that we find ourselves made a little bit, you know, kind of wiggle around on the chair and a little creepy when people start talking about love and they mean the stuff that Jesus was talking about as opposed to, you know, whatever it is that Paris Hilton does when the lights go out or when they don't.
Think about
you
that,
know.
It gives us the shakes.
Right. Okay, those give us the shakes too, but you get my meaning.
Different type of shakes.
But you can't, you know, everybody else had a sharp, spiffy, polished answer. You know, I've got an article here from the American Family Association again that is warning me in desperate terms that, where did it go? Daggummit.
That the microphone will catch fire in your hands as you speak.
Well, something like that. No, it's more along the lines of, bulk of homosexual campaign contributions going to Clinton's campaign coffer. You know, why don't they just call her a lesbian and have done with it?
They've done that, hell.
Well, yeah, that's right. I kind of forgot. You know, it all runs together after a while, Luke. That's what makes this a little bit difficult.
It's sort of like the thing, especially with Hillary, it's sort of like, what have they got left to call her? They've called her everything once or twice already. You know,
I love it. This article.
Recycling color dot again. Come on.
This article refers. It's six of the eight Democrat presidents will be taking part, talking about the logo debate. The debate arranged by the homosexual activist group Human Rights Campaign. Gee, I thought they were a human rights activist group. Silly me. But it says conservative activist Peter LaBarbera, an expert on the homosexual agenda. Well, with a name like LaBarbera, I would expect him to be an expert on the homosexual agenda. He's got a drag queen name, for the love of God. LaBarbera? Peter LaBarbera?
But you know what I mean? It's one of these things that's like, well, how do you know about that? It's like, it's a gay group. What do you expect them to know about?
This isn't
a pinochle group.
Yeah, he says Peter LaBarbera. God, I just envision him with this Carmen Miranda hat on his head. He says the homosexual activists are now demanding more and more. It's not enough that Hillary Clinton is comfortable around homosexuals. Now they want her to be more radical, as it were, in her pronouncements and in her policies, and I think this is what we are seeing. Well, meanwhile, last night the thing goes down on Logo, and lo and behold, Dennis Kucinich is the one who's sitting there saying, of course everybody should be able to get married.
Mm-hmm.
You know, meanwhile, Mrs. Clinton sort of nibbles around the edges and waffles.
Hummina.
Yeah, and Barack waffled, and Bill Richardson at one point said he thought that being gay was a choice and then had to back out of that by saying, of course, I'm no scientist.
Yeah, apparently Bill stuck both feet in his mouth and then switched them around for a while. Oh, God. Well, but what I'm wondering is, okay, now this weekend we get the Republican straw poll, which apparently...
which consists of argument.
No one else.
Yeah, which consists of arguments created with a bunch of straw men.
Which I'm sitting there going, you know, if the people and I were real fun, I'd be telling them, go vote for Mr. Paul. This could be fun.
They may not have to be told to.
I know. Apparently, he's quite popular up in that area. So it could turn into some fun.
I just want to see if there's any Winnebago backlash for Mitt Romney.
Well, like I say, this whole thing with the five sons and the whole thing, you know, I mean, that brings up the whole thing with Barbara and Jenna. And it's like, yes, we're in favor of the war, but I don't want my children to go fight.
Well, they're defending the country. Just like he defended the country from the French when he was a Mormon missionary, peddling up the Loire Valley.
Well, that wasn't bad enough then. It's my son is serving because he's driving me around Iowa. Gee, how many bullet holes have you had to duck, you know?
Yeah. Well, there was that dodgy situation where they almost got a poorly grilled cheese sandwich somewhere near Ames.
Oh, so he probably threw himself on it just to protect everybody. You know how it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one of these things. That's just one of those things. It's like, you know, guys, you know, when you all sit here and you're all going to, you know, you're all wrapping yourself around the war, now we're going to take the war and we're going to slap you upside the head with it. Surprise!
Precisely. Yeah, exactly.
So, oh, gosh, I tell you what. Well, I see off and on, I can't get the dang thing to come up with the listing, but I assume if everybody watches off and on this weekend that some of the Coase convention, I guess, is going to be on C-SPAN.
Well, that'll be interesting.
But like I say, I'm sure they're going to move it around so you can't find it.
Well, yeah, and the first thing they'll play is the segment where Hillary gets booed.
Yeah. Oh, we'll have to play that before, during, and after, you know.
I mean,
Well, I thought they had this thing on the other night that Tom Hartman and them had up in Seattle a couple of weeks ago. They had this whole bunch of the radio talk show hosts were up there, you know, talking. Of course, C-SPAN ran it at 1:15 in the morning.
Yeah.
Kind of like, gee, thanks kindly.
Yeah, because God knows there's so much compelling program during the day.
Oh, during the day, of course, we have to have the people from the Heritage Foundation on. We can't, you know, we can't let people hear other people's points of view.
Oh, that's like the guest that Mark Levine had on his show yesterday here on the Horn, some right-winger who opposed the children's health care program. And he said, you know, we have a study. And Mark said, and this study, it was commissioned by the Congressional Budget Office? I mean, you know, it was fully vetted? No, it's a study by the Heritage Foundation. And see, I'm at this place in my head and in my world and in my life, Luke, where when the minute somebody says that the study came from the Cato Institute, the American Enterprise Institute, the Competitive Enterprise Institute, the Heritage Foundation, well, the minute that comes out, you just get to look at them and go, you're kidding, right?
Well, it's like when you see these talks that they have, and the first thing you notice is he's standing in front of the backdrop of, you see, the Heritage Foundation. It's like, I don't need to hear this. I know what he's going to say any which way, you know.
Well, I loved it. We were bringing our daughter home from the tonsillectomy yesterday, so I had some right wing hate radio going, and I heard Bortz, and Agnes had never heard Bortz before,
and
she was threatening to leap from the moving automobile if our baby.
Of course, she had to endure it.
Yeah, if our baby hadn't been in the car with her and needed her care after the tonsillectomy, I think she might have. But Bortz is going on, and he's babbling on. He says, you know, I see Nancy Pelosi standing around. She's always got a banner behind her that says something like, Making America Stronger. What is it with these liberals and these banners behind them? Luke, I kid you not, he said that. The whole damn thing was invented by Karl Rove.
Of course.
You know, putting George's talking point on a banner behind him.
Well, you know, the thing of it is, you know, they're at the point now, and they've been this way, is they just tell the lie, keep telling the lie, and say, oh, no, I never said that. You know what I mean? You can sit there and play the tape for them. It's like, no, I didn't say that. You know what I mean? It's like they've caught the big giant head, you know, a bunch of times, you know, telling people to shut up. He swore I never told anybody to shut up.
And then you can play the clip of shut up. Yeah, I know.
You know, it's like, say, they just are at the point now where we don't need facts. We'll just keep there's this just droning on, and when we're done, we'll say, no, I never heard that. You know, what was it? They had the thing, over at Media Matters, was the thing with good old Howie Kurtz about McCain, and he never heard anything partisan on some of these things, and I'm like, or it was the Politico, was that it? Had something about, you know, that they'd never heard this stuff, and I wrote them back, I think I sent it to you, and I said, you know, isn't it amazing how the Politico doesn't have the internet or cable TV, apparently?
They're subletting Osama's cave. There we go. Yeah.
Yeah, that's apparently must be it. You know what I mean? It's sort of like, guys, I mean, if you guys are political reporters, you know, I'm expecting every morning or every evening, I'm assuming hopefully every morning, that the first couple hours of your day is just spent cruising the internet, looking at other papers and seeing what the hell's going on in the world and what other people are saying. I mean, that's what I generally do. I get up, and for the first hour, I check Media Matters, and I check maybe Huffington Post, and then I go to two or three, you know, of the big newspapers just to look at what the columnists are writing, and it's like, okay, just to get an idea which way the wind's blowing today.
I know.
You know, it's just amazing sometimes.
I mean, the stuff's out there. You can figure some of this stuff out. That's the trick. You know, the knuckle draggers and the mouth breathers, Luke, they think they're getting news from Bortz and Savage and Hannity and O'Reilly and Flush. They think that's news.
I don't even think it's opinion at this point. It's, you know, I mean, it's sort of like listening to the guy in The Wizard from Oz, you know.
Yeah, I know.
This ain't even opinion. This is.
And they've all got a surrender Hillary thing over the. Yeah, sorry, had to extend the Wizard of Oz metaphor.
Well, I understand.
Hey, Luke, you have yourself a great weekend. All right.
You too, Bob.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye now. I always enjoy our conversations with Luke. He's got a great comic sense. And Bob calling from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, welcome aboard. Oh, we lost Bob. You know, there are a few kinks to work out with the phone system yet, but I think we'll be okay. Are the phone calls coming through okay? Are you hearing the audio all right? You know, just sort of raise your hands in the chat room and let me know. I depend on you guys. Just because this is a little bit different than doing over-the-air terrestrial radio. Now, of course, coming up here after the top of the hour news, we will be talking with Max Blumenthal about his latest expose on the religious right. And it's a real hair-raising business. I mean, I can remember, what was it, a year and more ago when we started talking about Left Behind Eternal Forces, the video game, the one where you get spirit points for blowing away the queers and the Muslims and the liberal secular humanists. Yeah, wait till you find out where that game is going next. You will sit and scream. I promise, because I did. And, you know, we're a lot alike, you and me. Just keeping up, because you need this information, this kind of stuff. In case you were wondering about had some notion that no, you've never had a notion that the Republicans were going to settle down and get sane and stop being vicious, violent, crooked monsters. Headline: wow, Michigan Republican activist pleads guilty to sexual battery. And that doesn't even cover the half of it. A lawyer, who had led a Michigan Young Republicans organization, the crowd that Max Blumenthal, the college Republicans, he went and visited them. None of them would go to Iraq because, they had a football knee or football brain, or Jesus didn't want them to, or they were going to serve their country by not serving their country. One of those. A lawyer who formerly led a Michigan Young Republicans organization has pleaded guilty to sexual battery for forcing sex acts on a woman while both were at a convention last July. Wonder what convention. This is Michael A. Florey of Jackson, Michigan, facing most likely probation at his sentencing, otherwise nothing more than 1 to 5 years in prison. The judge asked if he was pleading guilty, and this guy goes, sure. And the judge has to press him and make him say yes. He said accepting the plea would mean less emotional hardship for the victim and witnesses. It's not because he's guilty. No. Not because he's guilty or anything. The young woman had said thank you. She was 21 at the time. She was intoxicated, became ill. Flory took her back to her hotel. She said thank you and goodbye, and then he forced his way into her hotel room and forced several sex acts on her. In other words, he raped her. And the prosecutor is going to let him off with 1 to 5 when he was facing 11 charges, including 8 counts of rape, kidnapping, aggravated burglary, and gross sexual imposition. Flory said, while I'm confident a trial would have demonstrated the full truth regarding these allegations, my experience as a lawyer was that this course is the best avenue for all parties involved. The possibility of being unavailable to raise my young son was simply too much for me to risk, and this will allow us to get on with our lives. After he raped a 21-year-old woman. Thank God, Republicans are out there holding up our traditional family values. Let's go to the phones and talk to Wayne. Hey, Wayne.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Doing good. How about you?
Good, good. I heard you mention airlines.
Yeah.
That kind of sparked my interest. Our transportation industry is broke. I mean, we tried Amtrak.
We
you
did.
Were there.
I was.
It's broke.
Yeah. Busted.
I just did the airline thing on the Vermont trip. It's even more broke. All I could tell people is if you could possibly avoid it, don't get on United. Now, coming from Charleston, West Virginia, and going to Burlington, Vermont, you don't have a whole bunch of chances, or choices, rather,
mm-hmm.
as to what you're going to fly. But, it was very similar to Amtrak. I mean, we're standing in Charleston Airport waiting to take off and look out the window, and they're jacking up our airplane because it has a flat tire. Of course, so we leave an hour and a half late. Fortunately, when we got to D.C., the plane we were going to connect to was even later than that. And so we got to get on the plane. We were supposed to land in Burlington at 6:30. We left D.C. at 7 o'clock. Got into Burlington. The stay in Burlington was absolutely wonderful. I forgot how beautiful it is, how vibrant the city is, it's just a beautiful, beautiful place. We had a very, very good time. But then we had to come home on United Airlines.
Oh, dear.
The plane was an hour and a half late leaving Burlington. And, that was mainly because it hadn't arrived in Burlington yet. And it was coming from D.C. when the plane finally landed, of course, they had to debark. Senator Patrick Leahy got off the plane, and I'm sitting in the waiting room, and, you know, it was interesting to see. I mean, you know, here's a very powerful man, arrives at the airport, no entourage, you know, nobody to meet him, nothing, just a guy coming home from work in D.C., you know. It was kind of nice. Anyway, I got up and introduced myself to him, and I said, how's everything going? And he said, well, it'd be a lot better if these airplanes could be on time. And I said, I'd really like to talk to you about that, Senator. And, you know, of course, everybody in the waiting room laughed and stuff. Anyway, we got to D.C. Of course, we're, you know, I don't know, an hour and a half, 2 hours late. Our connecting flight had already left. They informed me that there's a 9 o'clock flight, and they have one seat on it. I said, that's really good. I have five people. So they said, well, we'll put you on the 8:39 in the morning. I said, no, you won't. I want my baggage. I'm renting a car, and I'm driving back to Beckley, which is what we did. So, I mean, it's just, if we have any more business trips.
Go Greyhound and leave the driving to us?
No, we're taking, you know.
No, we're leaving the driving to us.
Exactly. I mean, at least you have some sense of control. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it's up to you.
Yeah, there's no snarky dining car attendant.
Of course, I mean, you know.
You can't sit down there. It's not 8:30 yet. It's 8:27. Don't sit down. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I'll never forget that. On the plane, I said, you know, the stewardess there, you know, I mean, no fancy stuff. And I used to fly when airlines were regulated. People argued to me, well, it costs more then. Well, if that be the case, so be it. They were on time. They treated you with courtesy. They acted like you were somebody. You know, I mean, it was an entirely different. And if you remember, I mean, you know, the airlines, when you got routes, you could get the very lucrative routes. But along with that, you had to take the routes that weren't so profitable, and the government subsidized you. And, you know, I think that's part of government's job, because under regulation, all the people got served.
Yeah.
You know.
Little bitty airports. I mean, I remember going across the river to Muscle Shoals, Alabama, and getting on a plane and winding up in Pittsburgh, you know, and it was no big deal.
No, exactly. Exactly.
Well, there's virtually no commercial air traffic to Muscle Shoals anymore. There's virtually no commercial traffic to Beckley, West Virginia anymore. They tried, it failed.
No, there isn't. And it's, well, it's just absolutely awful. Absolutely awful.
And you know what? It used to be, you know, you got a pack of peanuts or something along the way, you know, a bottle of water or whatever. Now the package of pretzels is $2, and so is the bottle of water.
It was free.
No. Oh, no, you got free on yours?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well.
Well, soda, water, and, I mean, the pretzels, you know, I don't know, I think my little 3-inch turtle could finish off a package, you know, by himself. And I said to the woman, you know, do you have any whiskey? Oh, she said, yes, but they're $5 a piece. I said, good, bring me two.
And it's two thimblefuls of whiskey.
Well, no, they give it a little bottles, you know, little Crown Royal bottles. It's a pretty nice shot, you know. But, I mean, it's just, and you're treated like, well, like you're a pain in the ass.
Well, you know, think about this.
You want what you paid for? I mean, who the hell do you think you are? You know.
And consider that since deregulation, the first thing that happened after deregulation is that the airline companies started going after their workers.
Yes, they did.
You know, the just unmitigated union busting activities. You know, whether it's the mechanics. The flight attendants, the pilots. I mean, this is kind of scary, but say you got a guy who's flying for U.S. Scare doing the run from Charlotte to Charleston and back every day. Do you realize, Wayne, that that guy makes maybe just slightly more than a manager at Taco Bell?
Yeah.
Because it's a deregulated airline, and we've got to make sure that there's enough money to pay the executives.
Most definitely. That's the most important thing.
I don't want the manager from Taco Bell flying me to Charlotte.
No, nor do I.
Delta Airlines, I don't know if they got away with it or if they're still able to do it, but at one time Delta was making its pilots and all of its in-flight folks sign pledges that they would not sign up for any public assistance because they all qualified for food stamps.
God. Listen, we were driving back from D.C. and we stopped at a place to eat and all that, and it was like a truck stop and that, and there's televisions all over the place. I'm looking up and I'm watching news, and the airline industry is the discussion. Well, here's a person from the airline industry, and they have on the bottom of the screen that complaints are up 45% from last year, which is, you know, pretty significant because last year wasn't a good year. And, you know, the guy says, you know, people can't make schedules, they can't do anything, and, you know, like, what are we going to do about this? And his answer was, well, if you're on a trip and you have to be back to work Monday, you should leave Saturday. And I'm sitting there screaming at the television, that's not the answer.
No, that's...
that's not the answer.
No, it really isn't. And you know, we can make light of these things and, you know, have our little laughs along the way. But when people travel long distances via public transportation, be it rail or airline, Wayne, there's a lot of stuff on the line. There's people waiting at the other end of the trip. There are business appointments to be made.
That's exactly right.
There, you know, weddings, funerals, stuff that matters.
Business meetings.
Yeah.
You know. It's, well, can't count them. So, next business trip, we're driving.
Yes, we are.
All we have to do is worry about the bridges.
Yeah, and that's just one. You know, that's just where you hold your breath at one end of the abutment, and you breathe out at the other one.
That's exactly right. And hope like hell you make it.
Yeah, because you know, I love a big American sedan.
Well.
Heaven help.
Listen, man, I know you got an interview coming up. And
yep, we've got Mr. Blumenthal on the line even as we speak.
Well, let's listen to him instead of me.
Yeah, you take care, Wayne.
Okay, brother.
Bye.
Take it easy, man.
It is about 6 minutes after the hour. Max Blumenthal is on the line with us. Of course, you're familiar with his work from his trip to visit with the College Republicans and the little freeform dance that he did, and the trip to Koofy Fest, rhymes with Goofy Fest. So he needs very little introduction. Max, are you there?
I'm here.
I'm so glad to talk to you. You're doing wonderful work out there, and it tickles me to see somebody actually shining a little bit of a light on these people that say that they have they hold in their hands the moral well-being of our nation.
Well, right, I'm shining a light literally on them, and it's fixed to a camera, which is showing people exactly what's going on there. Because while print journalism is valuable, I think I'm providing a higher level of proof. People need to see it to believe it these days, and they can't believe the things that they're seeing. These videos that the mainstream cable organizations aren't showing them, which is how extreme and influential these far-right groups are.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we've got the Bob Allen story coming out of Florida where this uber-Christian gets caught offering some guy $20 to perform oral sex on the other guy, and now he says it was because he was scared because the guy was big and black. Ted Haggard, the Baptist preacher from North Carolina from Tennessee, Virginia area, Bristol, who gets caught urinating in front of little children, drunk out of his mind, whacked on Flush Flimball's favorite drug, wearing a skirt. You're right, Max. There's no room for any of that on the mainstream media. Somebody's got to do it, and I'm so glad you are.
And picking up on the College Republican theme, the head of the Young Republican National Federation was recently found guilty of sexually assaulting a man in his sleep. This is a guy who had passed numerous homophobic resolutions for his organization. He was a rising star in the Indiana GOP. So it's a pattern across the board of not only extremism and people trying to change the Constitution, but also people in private violating the professions they make in public. Basically, it's a pattern of sexual hypocrisy on the part of these people who are authoritarian and want everyone else to do the opposite of what they do in private. The hypocrisy is present in my Chicken Hawks video especially. Because these kids don't even seem aware that they're hypocrites. They just take it for granted that people who are less fortunate than them are going to go to war and they're going to be able to go to college and party all the time.
And it really does
way of life for them.
Yeah, and it's morally for a secular humanist. We don't have any morals or anything, but still, it somehow manages to be morally offensive. Let me ask, before we get to the meat of your latest expose, Max. Let me ask you a question. Because it's something that I've been doing for a while. Every time that a big story breaks and there's no obvious connection, politically speaking, I will call, say, a local voter's registrar's office and check out somebody's and check out the perpetrator's voter's registration almost without fail. And I started doing this. You remember the BTK killer raider out in Kansas?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He was a Lutheran elder at a Lutheran church and a Republican.
Yeah, and I was one of very few people who called, and it took a little doing to get him to fess up to the fact that this guy was a lifelong registered Republican who was at the polls every time they opened, and, a devoted member of the party. And Max, over time after time after time after time, it's never reported in the media, but these people are almost uniformly hardcore conservative Republicans. Now, at what point?
Ted Bundy, the serial killer, one of the most notorious serial killers ever, was a right-wing Republican activist in Florida, and he offered his final interview to James Dobson, in which he said that porn drove him to do what he did, which was a completely cynical interview. James Dobson sold that interview for $1 million to mainstream outlets, and then he donated all that money to himself. This is who they are. It's the Republican Party is not only the biggest walk-in closet in the world. It's a conglomerate of criminal pedophiles who are cynical plutocrats, and to a man, a politically active serial killer is going to be a Republican. And there's just a deeper logic to it.
Well, at what point? I guess my question, Max, is at what point in time do we start demanding that this be considered an aspect of their criminal behavior?
Well, when do we start examining extreme conservatism as a form of mental illness, or at least as a form of cheap self-medication? Why are there so many, for instance, anti-abortion activists, female anti-abortion activists who have had abortions? Why are there so many anti-pornography activists who are former porn addicts? Why are there so many anti-gay bigots who used to be gay or closet homosexuals? I mean, there's a completely clear pattern with these people, and it's that their political activism, their reactionary politics was galvanized by a personal crisis they've had. So behind the Republican Party's politics of resentment is a culture of personal crisis, to get into this culture, I mean, you're going to find a lot of people who have psychological disorders that they were unable to treat in traditional ways. Like if you or I have a problem, Bob, we're going to reflect on it and we're going to try to work it out, within ourselves and maybe with our friends and talk about it. But these people, the problem remains within them. It remains there all along. If they're a porn addict, instead of getting getting rid of that problem through reflection, they're going to try to get rid of pornography altogether, because to them, they see cleansing the land of sin as a means of purifying their own soul. So they externalize their problems and project them on everybody else. A lot of this culture war that we're witnessing is the product of people who have psychological disorders.
Well,
this sort of the people have determined that yes, the Republican Party is now a lockstep authoritarian party, but nobody's really asked why, and why it's so attractive to so many of these people. Why are these scandals constantly occurring? It's because the Republican Party and the conservative movement offers people who have psychological disturbances not only emotional fulfillment, but security, a sense of security within the rigid confines of social conservatism.
And meanwhile, while you and I are having this conversation, somewhere in conservative world, Max, there's some blathering head going on about the fact that you and I are America's problem. And they'll have some Ann Coulter, Laura Ingraham, one of the attack blondes, or Thomas Friedman, or one of these perpetually wrong people on there, and continue to treat them as if anything that comes out of their mouths has any validity whatsoever. And I guess I'm wondering from your viewpoint, because you're going around the country, you're seeing things. Is this so endemic as to be unassailable, or can change come? Can we have change? Can we show normal America what these, pull the rubber mask off like, Mission Impossible, and show them who they really are?
Definitely confronting them with their hypocrisy is one of the most effective ways of confronting conservatives, since they are not only so deeply hypocritical, but they've become a movement that's decided that the government should get in your underpants, and most Americans don't like that. So, when I confronted Ann Coulter in my video about the Conservative Political Action Conference in front of 3,000 people, and I said, Ann, I think it's really great that you're standing up for the sanctity of marriage between a man and a woman, but can you explain to us why you have never been married and have had three broken engagements? And she simply didn't know what to say. All she could do was insult me. A lot of people, even conservatives, came up to me afterwards and thanked me for what I did, because they find her to be an embarrassment. So I think confronting them on their hypocrisy is a good way of beating back what they're trying to do. I think Ted Haggard's demise contributed enormously to the Republican midterm losses, because it demoralized the Christian right. And there's going to be more scandals. David Vitter, who, like the senator from Louisiana, the ultra right wing senator who liked to wear a diaper and get stomped on by prostitutes wearing stiletto heels, he's still in the Senate right now. I mean, what kind of a movement is this?
I know,
I don't know if change can come, but I think the more we encapsulate this movement within the frame of hypocrisy, the more marginalized it will become.
Is there a difference between... Now, I'm Max, I'm a recovering Southern Baptist, really. Grew up in Alabama, the real deal. And I got taught some pretty good moral messages by the little old blue-haired ladies in the basement of the Southern Baptist Church when I was a kid. I left the Southern Baptist Church and started my recovery when I realized that those morals ended at the top of the stairs when you got to be a grown-up and go to big church.
It's hard to be the same person on Saturday night that you are on Sunday morning.
It absolutely is, but I guess one of the things that I'd like to know, based on your observations, is there a difference between, I guess, what you'd call your rank-and-file evangelicals, the people who really are there every Sunday, every Wednesday, every time the doors open? Is there a difference between those people who are doing the following and these moral monsters who are doing the leading?
Well, definitely. I think I hit on that earlier. These moral monsters I think the biggest one is James Dobson. And James Dobson is not a theologian. He's the most influential leader of the Christian right by far. His ministry is funded to the tune of $150 million a year. He basically owns the White House, no matter who the president is, as long as they're Republican, and he runs Congress, at least the Republican side of it. And he's not a theologian. He's not a preacher. He's a psychiatrist, and he understands this culture of personal crisis that is eating up families in middle America who don't have the economic resources or the educational resources to hold the stable family framework together the same way that, you know, my grandparents who got the GI Bill did, for instance. There just aren't or people who are have the stability of unions, you know. The economic fabric of middle America is collapsing, and families are collapsing, and they turn to people like James Dobson for easy answers. He's not always spewing politics on his radio show, which is the third highest rated radio show in the United States. It's mostly easy to follow, but stern advice for couples who are breaking up, for instance, or parents who have unruly children, or gay children, or worse, people who have pornography addictions. And then once they're in James Dobson's once they're in his ring of influence, his sphere of influence, and they're getting the mail solicitations and they're sending money in, they're going to start to get political solicitations, and he's going to start to tell them that it's not their fault that they have these problems. It's the fault of the homosexual agenda. It's the fault of the liberals and the abortionists and the UN, and worse, radical Islam is a huge threat to their families, and they have to vote for his handpicked candidate. And so the followers get manipulated by these cynical people who don't have these problems and who are preying on people who have legitimate problems and legitimate fears, but don't have the educational or financial recourse to deal with those problems in a rational way. So that's what I think it is, and so I do think we have to distinguish between followers and the leaders. And I think when one of these leaders has a moral lapse or is a sexual hypocrite, we have to point it out and tell everyone and make sure that the followers know, especially, that they're being told to do something that their leaders aren't doing.
Well, let's, if you don't mind, let's move into... I contacted you... Well, first of all, I had a wonderful conversation last week with Thomas Shoemaker about the latest film from your trip to Kufi.
Yeah.
Now, you've got a new article that I found at the Nation's webpage this past Wednesday that just made the little hairs on the back of my neck stand up on end. Over a year and a half ago, we started talking on this network and on this program about the Left Behind Eternal Forces video game, where you get extra bonus noogies or whatever for blowing away homosexuals, secular liberals, Muslims, and the like. Stephen Baldwin, if I understand your reporting correctly, the youngest of the Baldwin brothers, went all fundy after 9/11 and has joined a group that's going to start distributing this game. Do I get this correctly?
Right. This group is called Operation Straight Up, or OSU, which is an inversion of USO. The USO brings, you know, it's the traditional government, Defense Department funded group that brings entertainment to the troops on the front lines, wherever they are. They've been doing this since World War II. But the OSU brings entertainment to the troops with its roster of entertainers, which includes Stephen Baldwin and even Evander Holyfield, who I don't think really knows what he's doing. It brings this entertainment with an end times theological message that if the troops don't convert and become born again Christians, they will suffer eternal torment in a lake of fire. And that's on OSU's website. Not only that, OSU is distributing the Left Behind Eternal Forces game through care packages to troops stationed in Baghdad. So after a hard day of house-to-house searches and battling insurgents in the hot streets of Baghdad, they can come back to their barracks and play this game where they command a virtual army in post-apocalyptic New York, and they're given the object of the game is to kill or convert as many non-believers as possible. So I mean, that's pretty disturbing. And more than that, they're also provided by OSU with proselytizing tools to proselytize not only among the troops but among Iraqi civilians, because all of the books they're given, which are like popular books about about Jesus's life, they're double printed in Arabic. And so not only does this violate the Constitution, because you're not allowed to proselytize in public institutions, it's a national security threat. And Stephen Baldwin and some other members of OSU are going to be heading to Iraq very shortly for what they call a military crusade in Iraq. You remember how much trouble George W. Bush got in for saying that, you know, the U.S. is going to wage a crusade against terrorism.
Right, sure.
Because the perception that we're waging a crusade is extremely offensive to people living in Muslim countries who were given their history, but OSU, this organization, which is endorsed by the Pentagon and which is supported by a Pentagon program called America Supports You, and is being flown over there by the Pentagon and Defense Department vehicles and with military personnel, is explicitly saying this is a crusade to convert not only troops but to convert people in the theater of conflict. And if they don't want to convert, well, maybe we should just kill them.
This, like I said, when I first read this, Max, it made the little hairs on the back of my neck stand up, because
I've been doing these stories for years, and this is one of the most outrageous things I've come across.
And do I understand you correctly? The Pentagon is basically putting its imprimatur, its stamp of approval on this thing.
Yeah, in my article, I link to a Pentagon press release which says that OSU is incorporated into the America Supports You program, and it completely whitewashes what OSU's agenda is, which is patently unconstitutional and illegal. But the press release went out and it says it right there. So,
what can this be stopped?
On the public record,
Max. Can this be stopped?
I think.
Have the games already shipped?
Somebody needs to file a federal lawsuit and challenge this, because there have already, and I think there's a good possibility that Mikey Weinstein from the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, who you should have on your show.
Oh, he's a friend of the program. He's been on a couple of times.
Great. Well, you should bring him on to talk about this and ask him if he's going to do a federal lawsuit, because he pressured the Pentagon and the Pentagon Inspector General into finding 3 high-ranking generals and 4 high-ranking officers culpable of participating in a video by Christian Embassy,
yes,
an evangelical group, into saying that, you know, they put God and family above the military in their country, and that they support this group's efforts to convert troops to born again Christianity. So I think there is something that can be done. It's just a question of doing it, and the first thing to do is inform people, because I don't think anyone knew about this before. This is just sort of lurking out there and happening below the radar.
Well, how do you, Max, respond? And because you know this will be coming, if this story gets any legs in the so-called mainstream or lamestream media, as far as I'm concerned. you know that the response will be, see, the liberals are trying to take away our right to share Christ Jesus with the troops.
They never had that right in the first place, so sorry.
But see, this is the same crowd that says, you know, the First Amendment doesn't mean separation of church and state. You know, they just make it up as they go along. They're vicious liars. With that in mind, I'm struggling here, because this is such a no-brainer for me that you don't do this. But with that in mind, how do you fight back against that charge? Do you just say, look, you're lying? I mean, I would do that. But
I mean, they deny the existence of the First Amendment if they say something like that. I mean, they're explicitly opposed to the First Amendment, and they make false claims that our founding fathers were Christian. They say that Declaration of Independence was signed in the year of our Lord, even though that was just a formality like AD or BC.
Mm-hmm.
They really have no way of holding these sorts of charges up in court unless one of their people has been installed as a federal judge by George W. Bush, which is increasingly a problem.
That is a distinct possibility at this point.
It's a distinct possibility. It's a huge problem. You know, a lot of people are saying, well, the Republicans don't control Congress anymore, and, you know, there's probably going to be a Democratic president. But in all these parallel, institutions that are peripheral to government, which are extremely important, especially the Pentagon and the military, which is the most lethal fighting force in the world, you have still the Christian right deeply embedded and gaining strength.
Well, frankly, the idea of an evangelicized, fundamentalized, proselytized Pentagon is terrifying to me, because if you had some sort of sane level of humanism throughout all of government, you would be at this point that government would be at risk from its own military, because they answer, the whole part of the dogma and philosophy that they adhere to is that they answer to a higher power.
Well, yeah, the military's always been a conservative institution, but sort of conservative in the sense that they follow orders, and they believe deeply in decorum, and they're sort of hostile to rapid change. And it's sort of like the military in Turkey or in Pakistan, where they serve as a check on radical religious movements that rise from civilian society. The problem is our military was cultivated to become increasingly ideological and reactionary after the Vietnam War, because civilian society was less interested in military service after the Vietnam War. All demographics except evangelicals were less interested in serving in the military. So the military began recruiting more aggressively among evangelicals and cultivating evangelicals, and not only that, accommodating them within the military by stretching the rules so that they could spread the gospel. So you have an increasingly ideological culture in the military that not only is supportive of Republican policies, but seems to believe that we're in a clash of civilizations with the Muslim world, and that we need to convert them and use the military as an instrument for doing that. And if not, we'll just kill them. And numerous high-ranking generals and officers have gone on the record and said that. General William Boykin, who did it the most publicly, isn't the only one.
Yeah, the one who said that we knew we would win in Somalia because our God was better than their God and their God was Satan. Yeah, I remember him very well. The issues you've raised, Max, are significant, but I can't help sort of taking it one step more personal, if you will. And I think about a guy like you mentioned, who's just spent a hot, miserable day in 130 degrees with a pack on his back and a bunch of body armor and dodging bullets, not knowing who the enemy is, maybe seeing a comrade or more blown to bits by a roadside bomb, and he comes back to forward operating base whatever, and he sits down and plays a healthy game of blow away the homos.
Right.
I mean, it seems like the goal of this, and I really don't have a censorious spirit. I don't want to limit access. I wish there was greater information access for our troops to all sorts of information over there. On the other hand, however, we've got problems. We're hearing about trials and courts martial verdicts. For people who, well, in one instance, a corporal who deliberately dragged a guy out into the street when they couldn't find the right one, blew him away and put a drop gun by him, and then proceeded to try to cover it up with his buddies. I mean, I would think, if I was a rational member of the command staff, that I don't want this game in my troops' hands, especially knowing what PTSD is doing to these folks.
Well, I mean, there are all sorts of violent influences. Obviously, the most violent influence is their participation in a failed occupation. And if you pick up, the Nation from 2 weeks ago, which has interviews with 50 troops on the record talking about what they've done to Iraqi civilians, I mean, you're going to see that, this occupation has not only resulted in a massive wave of atrocities, it stained the soul of this country. And you got to remember that the Left Behind video game is set in New York City, which is the city with, with the highest, for instance, the highest population of Jews outside Tel Aviv, and that the troops are going to have to come back after a war that was lost by the United States, and they're going to come back with all sorts of psychological disorders and physical disabilities and bad memories, and they're going to be left on their own to make sense of this whole thing. And during the time when they were in on the front lines in this bizarre and in many ways apocalyptic conflict, they were cultivated by groups like Operation Straight Up to see their violence as part of something that's greater than themselves and part of something that's greater than this war, even to see their violence as something that's biblical. And when they return, I mean, I'm just really troubled by what sort of political impulses the veterans are going to display, because it was the post-Vietnam generation of veterans that eventually galvanized the anti-government militia movement. Bo Gritz, for instance, was a Vietnam veteran who, inspired the character Rambo. You remember the last scene from the movie Rambo, where he starts blaming the protesters and says, "We could have won this war, but we were stabbed in the back by the protesters."
Right.
So, and that eventually led to the Oklahoma City bombing. So, just imagine.
Yeah, you can track this stuff, and we know the Pentagon's own statistics indicate that they are the American mental health and medical community and the veterans medical system is not adequately funded or supplied to deal with the PTSD issues that are going to be had by soldiers coming home. The signature injury of this war is a TBI, a traumatic brain injury. This is a recipe for disaster, but I get the notion, Max, that this is a disaster that these people actively want to foment.
Well, I don't think that the Christian right and affiliated parapolitical ministries want to foment a disaster, but they're so cynical that they don't recognize the consequences of their evangelization efforts, and the cynical tactics they use, like using end times theology to manipulate people and scare them into conversion. I mean, it's just not healthy, especially when you're working with people who are suffering from PTSD and who have been trained to kill and desensitized by military training to the sensation of killing. I mean, the first thing you do in basic training is they desensitize you to killing.
Sure.
And when they come back here, I'm just concerned about the political implications, especially when you hear the rhetoric coming from the Republican Party, which is that same stabbed in the back rhetoric you heard after the Versailles Treaty in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
from the people who were eventually going to make up the SA and the SS.
And the same things that the rising Nazi Party complained about in Weimar Germany, the so-called loose morals, degradation of traditional German values, that kind of thing. It's the same speech that comes from the religious right. You've got a reference in the article here to Stephen Baldwin speaking to the Southern Baptists, the Texas Southern Baptists in 2004, saying, "In my position, I just don't think I'm supposed to keep my faith to myself." Well, you know, this is the same Southern Baptist Convention that has never, never, never rescinded the ordination of Fred Phelps.
Right.
He remains an ordained Southern Baptist minister.
I mean, we could talk about, the Operation Straight Up and proselytizing in the military in the context of what happened to the Southern Baptist Convention. The Christian right used a stealth strategy in the late 70s and early 80s to take over the Southern Baptist Convention and use it as an instrument for proselytizing and impacting public policy to turn the tide back on civil rights and women's rights and gay rights and essentially constitutional rights for all Americans. The Southern Baptist Convention is the largest Protestant denomination in the U.S. So the Pentagon and the Defense Department and the military, that's just another square on the chessboard that the Christian right and the conservative movement in general wants to capture, using the same tactics they use to capture the Southern Baptist Convention, and that they're using to capture mainline churches, for instance, or school boards, or Congress, or the White House. So whatever happens in 2008 on election night, we're still going to have this problem of the Christian right using our institutions as a megaphone for their evangelization efforts.
Well, in all that you've done, Max, I'm sure you're familiar with the Dominionists and the Reconstructionists. The Reconstructionists go out there and they don't mind anybody hearing it. They'll tell you to your face. They want to bring back, and this is almost a quote from one of their leaders, they want to bring back public stoning as a means of execution, and you ask them why, and they say because there's lots of rocks.
That's Gary North.
Yes. Do you... And their institutions, the Reconstructionists, you know, they recently had this huge meeting at a Southern Baptist seminar retreat center in the hills of North Carolina or North Georgia or somewhere.
Right.
Is this really what they want? I mean, they want some sort of theocratic, you know, Iranian style government here in which they stand in judgment. I mean, are they serious, Max?
It's worth mentioning, by the way, that at that gathering was partly sponsored by the Alliance Defense Fund, which is the legal arm of Focus on the Family, which is the largest Christian right ministry in the country. So it's not just some lone wackos out there.
No, that's my point here. I don't think America knows about Reconstructionists and Dominionists and understands what it is they're all about. They think that, well, you know, we've got freedom of religion, so it's none of my business what these people believe. But the beliefs of these people go far beyond anything of the spiritual realm. They want actual control of the American nation, don't they? I mean, they're serious about it. They sit around and they're not joking.
Well, this is a big one, and I guess we could do a little primer on Christian Reconstructionism right now. It's another way of referring to it as postmillennialism, and what we've seen a bizarre fusion recently of premillennialism and postmillennialism. Tim LaHaye, who is behind the Left Behind series and behind the Left Behind video game that we've been talking about, is a premillennialist because he believes that Jesus could come back and usher in the rapture at any time, and that we're just looking for a series of dispensations that will presage the return of Jesus. Postmillennialists believe that Americans have to usher in the return of Christ through the use of politics, by using stealth tactics and democracy to end democracy, essentially, and put the United States under the control of biblical law. That means replacing the Constitution with all 613 case laws in Leviticus, which include the execution of disobedient children, pagans, witches, abortion doctors, and women who get abortions, and gays, and everyone else, and probably me and you. It's pretty scary. The theories of postmillennialism or Christian Reconstructionism, the philosophy of it, helped give rise to the Christian right. And there, because where was the Christian right before the 1970s? It sort of, in a way, didn't exist. Evangelicals were very wary of politics, but when this philosophy came along, You know, it appealed to them, and it galvanized their mobilization. So, do I think that they believe we can eventually become a Christian version of Iran or Saudi Arabia? I'm not sure. What troubles me is what I see them doing, and I think we should judge them by their actions. They are using the tactics that were advised in the manuals written by leading Christian Reconstructionists like R.J. Rushdoony and Gary North, who advocate the execution of all these people, all these infidels. Those tactics are being employed. While they may not get the results they want, they are still doing massive damage to our constitutional freedoms, and I think this movement represents the biggest threat, a bigger threat to our constitutional liberties than any, Al-Qaeda group or any Hezbollah group or any terrorists or communists or so-called foreign threat.
Because they'd have to get here. The Reconstructionists are already among us.
Well, they're already here, and they're within our system, and they're very well-funded and influential, and they're using it. And just look at the people who've appeared in my videos. I mean, they're not just Republicans. Joseph Lieberman appeared in my Christians United for Israel video.
Absolutely.
And praised Pastor John Hagee as Moses. He said he compared him to Moses. So maybe Joseph Lieberman doesn't support everything Hagee supports. You know, Lieberman's pro-choice, but he is operationally supporting Hagee's agenda by appearing at his conferences and giving him the cover he needs.
Yeah, all the while never realizing that Pastor Hagee, after Jesus comes back and demands that Joseph Lieberman confess Christ, Pastor Hagee's going to be waiting with a sword to run it through Joseph Lieberman if he says no.
Right. I mean, and Joseph Lieberman would respond, you know, I just don't believe the same thing he believes, so I'm happy to work with him on common goals like supporting Israel. But, it not only is that cynical, what you're doing is you're providing cover for all the other things Pastor Hagee wants to do, like remove separation of church and state, the Establishment Clause, the First Amendment, which would effectively make Jews second-class citizens at best, along with everybody else who isn't a born-again Christian. And they're very serious about doing that, and they've done that in places of this country. You know, a Jewish family in Delaware was literally run out of their town in rural Delaware when their son decided he didn't like singing Christmas hymns in his public school, and so the family filed a lawsuit.
And yet what you hear on mainstream media is Bill O'Reilly saying that that Jewish family in Delaware was somehow waging a war on Christmas.
Right. The war on Christmas. I mean, come on. Could there be anything more not only manufactured and fake, but insidiously anti-Semitic and designed to intimidate anyone who doesn't adhere to the Christian rights agenda? It's sort of mind-boggling that this has gained traction, and that so many groups like have let it happen. I mean, I'm really not only am I pointing the finger at the Christian right, I'm pointing the finger at groups like the Anti-Defamation League and Abe Foxman, who are supposed to represent me and other American Jews. And they've completely capitulated to the Christian right over the issue of Israel. And part of that capitulation means that they stay silent when the Christian right intimidates Jews in the U.S. through these campaigns. It's not just Jews. It's anyone who is a member of a minority religion or anyone who's a mainline Christian. I mean, I think the mainline Christians right now are the most under attack, because there's an effort, a multi-million-dollar effort, being waged by a group in Washington called the Institute for Religion and Democracy.
Exactly. We've talked about that on this program.
Howard F. Amundson, a disciple of the Christian Reconstructionist R.J. Rushdoony, who I profiled. He's an eccentric, reclusive billionaire who believes, he said in 1985, what I want is the total integration of biblical law into our lives. He's funding this campaign to split the mainline church and cause a schism. So that,
well, they started with the Southern Baptists, and now they've moved on to the Methodists and the Presbyterians, haven't they?
Right, exactly. And the goal is to drain the war chest, and the you know, the central offices of the Episcopal Church in the USA, the Methodist Church in the USA, and the Presbyterian Church in the USA by breaking off, by creating breakaway organizations that consist of members of churches who don't agree with the the leadership on issues like homosexuality or radical Islam.
Well, there's no, yeah, and there's no
issue they can come up with.
And there's no better example of that than D. James Kennedy and his Coral Snake Ministries down in Florida. That's a Presbyterian congregation, supposedly.
Right, that's the Presbyterian Church in the USA, which is different
from the various and sundry Presbyterian synods. Max, I really appreciate the time. I've kept you on a lot longer than I told you you'd be on, and I apologize for that. But this is such compelling and such important information that it demands more than just soundbite radio. And that's, you know, we try to do conversation radio here on the Horn. And I really appreciate your time. And more than that, Max, I appreciate your work. Please, anytime. Go ahead.
It's not every day that I get to go on a show like yours where we can actually have these kind of conversations and where the host is as well informed as you are, so I really appreciate the opportunity.
Any time that that something catches fire for you, I hope you will consider the Horn an outlet for getting the message out, because you're doing brilliant work out there. Are you and Thomas going to take the video camera anywhere else anytime soon?
Well, I'm just going to get started on a book really soon, and my energy is going to go into that book for the next 3 months. But when the campaign heats up, we're going to get on the campaign trail with our video cameras and hopefully keep entertaining and informing people by posting our videos on the internet, on the Huffington Post and YouTube. So you can stay informed on what I'm doing by visiting my website at maxblumenthal.com.
Well, we certainly will.
All the videos.
I try to wander by as frequently as I possibly can, because I worry that Mr. and Mrs. Normal out in America have no idea of the stuff that you're talking about, and that's not for it's not from disinterest on their part. It's from the fact that it's not allowed to be out there. We're not allowed to be told. You know, can you imagine Katie Couric doing a segment on what you've just talked about?
Well, I think, you know, Angelina Jolie's bisexuality and Paris Hilton's criminal record are much more important.
Aren't they, though? Aren't they? Well, Max, again, I hope we'll talk again soon. And please, again, you've got an open invitation here to keep shining this light and letting folks know that this monstrosity is out there. And, you know, above all, I consider you a friend and... stay safe. These are dangerous people, Max.
Yeah. Well, I'm not afraid of them like that, but...
Well, the Reconstruction
is... They're dangerous in a political sense, and I think, you know, it's up to everyone to keep the Constitution safe and to keep the country safe. These people, I think that's the biggest danger they pose, and it's not any threat to me.
Well, you know, we all benefit by trying to preserve the Constitution, because one of the sad facts watching the Supreme Court decisions that are coming out from a bunch of, you know, fundamentalists of their own right, you know, Scalia's Opus Dei and all that. I've argued that they're trying to reduce the First Amendment to be nothing more than a life support system for the fundamentalist religion industry. So, you know, as long as you're pointing this stuff out, I think we've got a fighting chance.
Well, thanks a lot, Bob. Thanks for having me on, and keep it up.
All right. It's been a real pleasure, and again, I hope we talk soon. Max, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Take
now.
Care.
Max Blumenthal, that's maxblumenthal.com, B-L-U-M-E-N-T-H-A-L, maxblumenthal.com. The Nation has this article, Kill or Convert, brought to you by the Pentagon. Read it for yourself. You heard a lot of the stuff that surrounds it. Read it for yourself. Call somebody. Write to somebody. You know, alert. If you've got a Democratic congressman or a Democratic senator, send them the link. Because, you know, we assume things about these people that they know what's going on, but it's been proven time and again that they don't, if you know what I mean. So let them know. Let them know. Maybe you go to a normal church. Let them know. It's just being done in the name of a man who said, love thy neighbor as thyself, is the second greatest commandment after love God. And they're giving video games to soldiers that encourage them to, you know, who are not in the best frame of mind. I wouldn't be in a good frame of mind after 12 hours in 130 degrees with people shooting at me. And you're going to give them a game that encourages them to shoot the queers? Whew, mother. Let's talk to Jim before we wrap the show up this evening. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm scared.
Well, that's quite a remarkable interview you just had. You know, my question is this. Are we trying to produce a generation of Raymond Shaw? Remember Raymond Shaw and the Manchurian candidate who came back brainwashed?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, are they going to try to produce a generation of vipers, men who are seriously damaged with traumatic stress and coming back with the theory of a backstab theory, of, you know, in their head, just like so many German veterans came back after World War I that Hitler used?
I think it's deliberate, Jim. I really, honest to God, do. Because
frightening.
And it's not just people who will separate from service. If you go to militaryreligiousfreedom.org, Mikey Weinstein's site, who Max was talking about, you will find a wealth of information there of what is being done in terms of creating a proselytized, evangelicized, fundamentalized, active duty military. You know,
I just wonder, well, what is the role of the military chaplain? Because, you know, I've read the handbook, or they used to use for the military chaplain, and these men were sent with this handbook, the DA pamphlet, that encompassed every type of religion, from Buddhism to...
I've got a feeling that pamphlet's been thrown out, Jim. I'm not kidding. I've got a feeling that pamphlet's been thrown out. Because
I have it around here somewhere. I mean, they even embrace Satanists and stuff like that. I mean, they believe in giving every soldier or whatever, they have a prescribed rights for burial. And
well, when you get a minute, go to militaryreligiousfreedom.org, and you can see what's been done. And the chaplaincy is at the heart of it. The chaplaincy is at the heart of this this effort to send this hateful video game to active duty soldiers serving in Baghdad.
That is very, very frightening.
They're endorsing this OSU group. It's astonishing. I mean, it's unconstitutional, it's criminal,
you know,
and it's a recipe for disaster.
I have my own religious beliefs, but
sure.
You know, the one that supersedes all of them is called multiple choice and freedom of choice.
But these evangelicals don't believe in that, Jim. They do not believe in it.
Well, that's...
That's
just incredible.
Mikey Weinstein got involved in all of this because his kids, you know, he's an honors graduate of the Air Force Academy, Mikey is, and his kids are there too, and you know, he's Jewish. And his kids were being told, you know, basically that they had no choice, that they had to go to these evangelical fundamentalist events, and that it was fundamental to their success at Colorado Springs. And that's what motivated him. And it's all over the place. You've got a sick veteran at a hospital, I think, a VA hospital in Iowa, who told them repeatedly that he was Orthodox Jewish and that he kept kosher. Okay? And they repeatedly tried to bring him hot dogs and told him that Jesus would forgive him if he ate pork.
Well,
that's where we are. We're also out of time, though, Jim. Thanks so much for your thoughts.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. That's it. We'll be back Monday. Hope you will be, too. Hope you enjoyed or got something out of the program this evening. Our good friend Peter Godbold of Strictly Confidential is coming up next. He is a rerun, as Peter is actively engaged in being a real person with a real job right now. And he's been, I guess Peter's probably had about 4 hours sleep in the last 48, because that's the kind of guy he is. So thanks, everybody. Thank you, Agnes, sitting there, you know, soldiering through, even though you don't feel well. Pleurisy is no fun, I know. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, WhiteRoseSociety.org. If you value what happens on the horn, you value the work of Ben Birch. Thanks to the United Brotherhood of Carpenters, who, by helping get this network started, are helping us in our attempt to save the American dream. And always, 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 Gina, RMR, it's all for you. You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
This is the Quality News Network, and when the closing bell rang for the week, the major indices had actually gained a little. We'll talk about the spectacular day in the world markets in our business block. A bucket that is inspected daily for safety somehow plunged 550 feet down an air shaft at a southern Indiana coal mine this morning, taking three construction workers to their grave. Investigators are working to determine the cause. So far, the tiny microscope sent down a 150-story deep, 2.5-inch wide hole at Utah's Crandall Mine has detected no signs of life, and an oxygen sensor has not shown a habitable space. Rescue workers are not giving up hope, though. Another much wider hole is being bored, and a camera will be fed down it tonight. A delegation from South Korea is meeting at a mutually safe yet hidden location with the Taliban to secure the release of the 21 humanitarians being held by the militants. The Taliban says it wouldn't kill any more hostages and it wouldn't arrest the negotiators. Word is, the talks are showing promise. A U.S.-British resolution has been overwhelmingly approved by the United Nations calling for a greater mandate in Iraq. The UN withdrew from Iraq after a bomb attack in Baghdad 4 years ago. Now, security has improved and a UN assistance mission has been extended. The UN will take on a more powerful advisory role covering issues ranging from politics to economics and human rights. In French Polynesia, a local plane making a routine 7-minute island hop crashed yesterday afternoon, moments after takeoff, killing all 20 aboard. The twin-engine turboprop was on its way from Moorea to Tahiti. In Minneapolis, divers have recovered three more bodies from the collapsed bridge ruins. Triple-digit temperatures set new records yesterday throughout Georgia and the Carolinas, and forecasters expect the heat wave to continue throughout the South and Midwest until next week. The nuclear power plant that was damaged